find their seat real quick. Let me give you another quick update on how the schedule is evolving today. John Swallow is also a Bishop of Award, and they have an activity that's pushing up against ours, but will be done at 2 o'clock, and it's right here in Sandy. And so he's run over there to that event to keep his commitment there, and then he is going to get back here before we're done. And the pictures will be out in the foyer, and we'll have someone who knows the names of most of the people out there saying this is their name and getting them signed and stuff. And if there's a few that we don't know all your names, they'll be out there. And he said, I'll stay as late as you guys need. I don't have any other commitments the rest of the day. So don't worry. If you didn't get your photo signed in the intermission, we're going to get it all taken care of. And for those of you that have been asking where Rip Mason is, I invite you to contact corporate and update your email address. Okay? We've communicated numerous different things about events changing and stuff, but you having an accurate email with the corporate office makes a lot easier to communicate. We ran into a scheduling conflict. He's promised that he will be here. We're looking at dates and times to get him here in the near future, and so we're still, you know, on tap for that. And also, it was sad to hear that some of you in the room actually didn't make it to our Christmas party last night. That was absolutely so much fun. I mean, here's why you should never miss anything. They actually gave away an iPad at the event last night. True. True. Is that true, guys, that were there? Gave away an iPad, and you could have won it. In fact, you took the iPad home, didn't you? You're not using it right now, right? All right. All right. We gave away an iPad. That's all I'm going to say about that at this point. So, never miss an event. With that said, to introduce... Okay, we're going to do recognition a little bit later in the segment. To introduce our guest for today, we have a clip to show a little bit about his journey. And we're going to roll with that first. Do we want to cue it up and hit the lights and the projectors? Here we go.
Most people like going to a baseball game every now and then. There are some diehards who are lucky enough to have season tickets maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Our next guest did something incredible, however. He went to every single Yankee game this season, home games and away games, 162 of them. This video is, I believe, he's packing his car for the incredible odyssey. The guy who did this, his name is Steve Malia. He is 41 years old.
Right.
He's from North Carolina. And he's on our couch right now to tell us why you did this incredible thing. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
And Steve, you're originally from Long Island.
I am.
Obviously a huge Yankee fan. Your car there looks like you're packing up to go off to college. Really? 162 games. How did you do this?
You know what? I saw the schedule at the beginning of the year, and I've had this desire for about 3 years. And every year I say I'm going to do it. And I knew I wasn't getting any younger. And just physically, if I was ever going to make it, I had to do it now.
Well, lots of people have the desire, but the ability to do this costs serious money and time. You're judged. What do you do?
I have a business called Legal Shield, which, like, I'm an independent associate, like a franchise. And so I'm able to work. I have a couple partners, so they're running things for 6 months. They gave me the liberty to take a few months off. And it's just been great.
So you did this full time.
Yep.
My goodness gracious. All right, where do we start? How much did this all cost?
You know, I haven't added everything up, but it's in the $50,000 range, and 50 to 60 probably.
Just in expenses, but not including the time that you, the money that you lost by not working.
Right. Yeah, just in what it costs: airfare, hotels, tickets, gas, rent a car.
Was it worth it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was so much fun. Just, I tell you, the best part about it is just every day I go to the ballpark, whether I'm on a transit or driving, the adrenaline, and I get it still every day.
Tell us about some of the pictures we're seeing here. We just saw you and Joe Girardi.
Yeah,
absolutely.
This is some friends in Cincinnati.
So the Yankees knew about this crazy guy who's stalking the team.
Yeah, there's a fine line between stalking and a fan, so I'm not sure what they thought of it. I met Girardi once, and he thought it was pretty cool.
There you go, right there, looking like you're having a really good time. So what are you doing along the way? Are you staying in hotels? Are you calling up strangers saying, hey, let me crash on your couch?
You know what? I have a good social network just from the business that I'm involved in, so I've been traveling around. And when you really break it down, it's not that difficult. You're looking at 14 cities, and then you start, you know, do I have friends in Toronto? Do I have friends in Seattle? And, you know, I spent 51 nights in hotels. I stayed at 23 different people's houses, and I caught 33 different flights.
Did you catch any fly balls or home? Did you catch any balls in the stadium?
I do. I got 12 altogether, but two live foul balls, 10 batting practice and stuff.
You're single, right? You're a bachelor?
Yeah.
You're able to do that? Yeah. Okay. Otherwise. And didn't you have a buddy who kind of bailed out at some point? What happened?
Well, he probably wouldn't tell it that way, but he lasted 57 games, and he was a comedian. So the idea was we would hit, I'm a comic too, so we would hit stand-up comedy shows in every city, and it started working out great. We were working almost every night, and it got too much. And, you know, the tickets were expensive, and I'd look over, and he'd be playing Scrabble. During the game.
He's bored.
Bored out of his mind. Bored out of his mind. But I don't blame him. And so after 57 games, we had a rough trip on the West Coast.
Well,
just two guys traveling together in a hotel all the
time. This is a movie. You've got to make it a movie.
Yeah, seriously.
I'll play myself if you want.
Now, what would you say to the ladies? I mean, you're a single guy. Mm-hmm. What would you say to the ladies if you're going out on a date with them and you're trying to explain your fanaticism about baseball?
Yeah, I don't think most people would really understand it. I mean, it's...
So you're resigned to being staying a bachelor then?
All right, you're going to go to the playoffs?
Absolutely. I can't wait. I'm so jacked for tonight.
All right. What about next season? Watch it on TV?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I really tried for about 30 days to get sponsors. I tried every beer company and every hotel and every airline. And they all said, next year we've got our things going for this year. So if I could get a sponsor or somebody would back me, I'd do it again in a second. I had a blast.
Well, maybe.
Steve, what's your you got a website you want to
Sure. It's 162yankeegames.com.
162yankeegames.com. We'll put a link on our website. Congratulations, Steve Molina. Unbelievable.
I appreciate it.
It's really cool.
Thanks, Greg.
You're living the fantasy that Greg wants to live.
Awesome.
Steve, thanks a lot.
Awesome. All right, if you're ready, say I'm ready. I love doing that. It's a great way to get the energy up and going. And I planned out my whole 162 trip in about four notebooks like this. And it was just weird. I at the beginning of the season, I printed out the schedule. And I looked at it, and I said, you know what, I could drive there, I could fly there, and I basically just pieced the whole thing together, and then I started doing a budget for what it would cost, and then I couldn't get anybody to go with me, like Kim or Mike or anybody that could finance it themselves to go with me, because they thought I was crazy, so I had to pay for my buddy to go, all right? And you ever, like, pay somebody to be your friend? That's basically what I was doing. And it wasn't a good, it was hard because if you've ever been somewhere where somebody else is paying for everything, it's not a fun position for him to be in. So we started getting on each other's nerves, as you can imagine, and I just decided to cut the cord, and he went home after 57 games. But it was so incredible, and again, you know, I just hope that the biggest thing is to inspire somebody else to live your dream. I mean, I know that in all of us, anybody familiar with Joel Osteen and his work? Joel Osteen, I just love listening to him. I think he's so just motivational, quite frankly. But he said that, you know, if God put a dream in your heart, then you have everything in you. You have all the potential in you to fulfill it, right? And I felt like there was a dream in my heart, so I just wanted to go up there and do that. And so what I'm going to do today is the thing that I absolutely love doing. You know, I love playing blackjack. I saw Merle Haggard on Thursday and Ron White last night. We're going to see an Elvis show, a Cirque du Soleil show tonight. I love doing all that stuff, but I love this part of my life as much as anything that I do. I love sharing, I love teaching, I love communicating with other people that are like-minded, going in the like direction. I think the toughest thing for all of us, and I believe that this room is full of the 3%ers in life, that could be doing anything today, but you made the decision and you backed it up with discipline to be able to do that. So people like Dave Hall would absolutely do anything in the world if he ever asked of it, me of it, because I have so much respect
for people that, number one, to be in the business, but to go out there and to become a millionaire club member like he has. Absolutely incredible. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to spend about the first 45 minutes or so talking to the newer folks. And I think it's important for everybody to hear, you know, that kind of a message, because what we do in this business constantly is we're getting other people started in the business. Second, then we're going to take do recognition, and then I'm going to come and I'm going to do a training that Mike and I and Kim came up with recently, and it's called the nine landmines of our industry, the nine explosions. You know, what do we know about a landmine? Is you can't see it coming, and sometimes you step on it, and if it explodes, you're out of the business. And so we've come up with nine things that we really think just kills people in the business. So we're going to go over those. And then I'm going to end with six action steps that we all need to be focused on right now, between now and the end of the year, and between now and Oklahoma City at our convention. How many people have been with the company less than 90 days, during your first 90 days with the company? Awesome. Let's hear it for those folks. That's great. And I'm going to take you back a few years. I've been in this industry for 17 years, and one of the tips that I'll have, one of the landmines is really, and I'm sort of giving it away early, but it's about comparing yourself to other people. And I know that this business never goes as fast as we want it to. How many people would agree with that? And so many times, we're not focused on the company, the product, or the compensation plan, even though they're the same for everybody. But we look in the mirror and we say, what's wrong with me? Why aren't I growing faster? And we compare ourselves to other people. And it's one of the worst things that you can do. So sometimes in just hearing other people's stories and where they came from, I think it could just be inspirational, because it gives the rest of us hope. And back for me, I got involved in 1994. At the time, I was I got out of college. Anybody ever go to college? Dave, I was just seeing if you're paying attention. He's a good associate. He raised his hand for every question, so I was going to see if he was really paying attention there. He got his GED, good enough diploma. Is that right? And when I first got involved, oh, you didn't. Sorry. Who cares? I never used my degree. I actually lost my college degree. The night I had a pretty good party that night after graduating, and I never found it since, but luckily I never needed it. But I had the hardest time finding a job out of college. I went to a small college, and I liked where I was in St. Augustine, Florida, and there was no way I was moving back in with my parents. So I really wanted to stay in that town, maybe get a job there. And if you would have told me that I could make $50,000 a year in the field that I studied, which was TV and radio broadcasting, that would have been great for me. I would have probably even signed a contract for the rest of my days to be able to make that. I thought that back then. And now I'm talking about per year, not per month. You guys with me? This is an annual income. But I couldn't get a job like that. And it got so bad, I was, my parents were saying, listen, we're not, we're cutting you off. And I was very blessed that parents that put me through college. But this is it. If you want to go out there and do something, you're going to have to get a job. So one day I see an ad in the paper for Denny's. You guys familiar with Denny's out here? Yeah. So mistake number one is I brought my resume to the interview. I probably shouldn't have done that. And like everybody's coming and leaving, like you're watching all the people eat breakfast and leave and stuff like that. And I'm dressed up a little bit, and I got my resume, and I'm literally waiting for the manager to come see me and interview me. And I'm there for like 10 or 15 minutes. And so I called the stewardess over, or the hostess, I should say, or I walked up to her and I said, hey, listen, is the manager going to see me or not? And she goes, hold on. She goes back. She comes back about 5 minutes later. And I guess at that point I had filled out an application and given her my resume and said, he has your information. He'll be in touch. And I was like, bam. You ever been at the bottom? Yeah. And no disrespect for those that are in the service industry right now, but I just thought I was fancy with my college degree and all. And I was told by the, not even the manager of Denny's, but the hostess at Denny's, that they'll be in touch. Right? It was a low point. Right? So the next day I answered ad in the paper. It said, rock and roll environment. Work with people you like. I thought, this is for me. Right? So I traveled from St. Augustine to Jacksonville, where I was living in St. Augustine. It was about an hour drive. And it was one of those things where they didn't tell you anything about what they were doing. They were in the fashion industry, and they had music playing, and everybody, hugging each other. I was like, I sort of like this environment. This is great. Right? The next day I showed back up for my second interview. And at the end of it, they gave everybody like a box of perfume and cologne. You guys familiar with these guys? It's a company called Centura Creations. And they talk about you can work real hard for 90 days and you can own your own business, which actually was true. They were sort of, misleading a little bit. They said the first 30 days you're going to be in our marketing department, which means you were basically out there selling perfume and cologne. The next 30 days you're going to be in our management department, which basically means you're out selling perfume and cologne with people on your hip and you're teaching them how to do it. Then they talked about you're going to be in our administration phase, where you got to hire other people to go out there and do what?
market fake perfume and cologne. And I got excited about owning my own business for the first time in my life. My name was on the door, and I literally worked. I was there every morning at 8 o'clock, and I worked till 8 o'clock every day, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I promised the people when they hired me that I would give it, or they, you know, they hired me. They brought me on as an independent contractor, that I would give it 1 year. And I was fairly successful. I mean, we marketed probably in the neighborhood of about 20,000 bottles of knockoff perfume, which wasn't bad, in a year. But what it let me personally do, and it was part of my journey, was to learn sales, to, you know, to be in front of a group a little bit and motivate my little sales team and stuff like that. But the day the year was up, I called the guy, my regional manager, said, "Hey man, you know, thanks for everything." And it was hard to get out. You know, they have it set up where your name's on the lease and you're connected to everything, so it's easier to get in than it is to get out. But I was able to just sort of negotiate, and I got out of there. And at that time in my life, I really didn't know what I was going to do next. And my brother Mike, as many of you know, is my older brother. He's 18 years older than me. He's the oldest boy in the family. I'm the youngest boy. In fact, I was born June 24th, 1970. He graduated from high school June 23rd of 1970. So my mom came to his high school graduation, 9 months pregnant, obviously. I was born the very next day. And literally, we never liked each other, right? Even today, I'm still not really sure how I feel. But we didn't, because we never lived in the same house. And he was a hippie. He had hair down to here, and he was following the Grateful Dead all around the country on trains and stuff like that. And my parents would raise their eyes anytime anybody ever brought up his name. He was like the Ralph Cramden of the family. He always had a great idea. He was writing a book. He was always going to become rich and famous. And I actually bought into it. I was the only one in the family that said, "What if he does become rich and famous?" And no one else is paying attention. And so I was always sort of extra nice to him, right? And then he comes and visits me in college one day. He asked me what I wanted to do when I got out of college and for career and stuff like that. And it was very interesting. As soon as he asked me, I didn't even realize I did it. He pointed out to me. He asked me, and we were walking down the sidewalk, and I looked down, right? He asked me, "What do you want to do the rest of your life?" And I looked down. And sometimes people do that in life because they don't see possibility, and it's just sort of a habitual thing. You look down, right? And he said, "You know, when somebody asks you what you want to do, you should look up, because like the world is full of possibilities and stuff like that." And the best thing that my brother ever did, he's my best friend now today, but he changed the way that I think, and he changed the way that I literally looked at the world. And, you know, a short time after I quit my perfume business, we became business partners. And at first, I was just a guy in the back of the room. He had a small seminar company in New York. And, you know, my brother never made, you know, more than $40,000 or $50,000 a year. We always make it seem exciting, like he had a seminar company in New York. But he was the kind of guy that if people came in with seminars and they couldn't afford it, they would bring him like a Buddha or a book as payment. He didn't care. Come on in. And because he really liked sharing the ideas of self-improvement, if you will, self-achievement. And even though that he hadn't necessarily used it in his own life yet, he got the concept, right? And a guy by the name of John Milton Fogg. Anybody ever heard the name John Milton Fogg? He wrote a book called The Greatest Networker in the World. Him and my brother go back from one of my brother's early businesses, then after food business. So John came to one of our seminars, and he said, "How would you like to have a business, right, where the people just don't leave, and you got to work hard for 30 or 60 days, 90 days to build another seminar? But what if all those people came back, and they brought other people back, and everybody paid? And then they brought people back, and they brought people back." And he basically introduced us to network marketing. And we said, "Yeah, if something ever comes down, you know, we don't want to sell a lotion or a potion or a pill or a diet product or a hair tonic. You know, not that those aren't great products, just what we didn't want to do that." But he introduced us to a gentleman that was starting a TV network that focused on personal development and personal achievement. And we were with that company for about 4 years. The most we had ever made in 1 month was about $10,000, which was pretty cool. But, you know, it took a while to get up to that. And there were two guys working on a full-time basis. And that whole 4 years that we were with that company, we lived with our sister, right? Now, we didn't tell people we lived with our sister. We drove a Geo Metro, right, that squeaked. You ever have a car that squeaks? For years, we used to, like, if this was a meeting, we wouldn't even park in the back of the parking lot. We would find something reasonable down the road and then walk the rest of the way, because everybody was on our team. We didn't want to hear them hear our car squeaking, right? And funny story was, I don't know a lot about cars, but it was only like a spark plug or something like that that had to be tightened, and the car wouldn't have squeaked. Just a little side story, not real important. But for the entire 4 years that we were with that company, we could have at any point, when we were making $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 or even going through the ranks, we could have probably moved out And, you know, got our own place. But we realized that we wanted to build this thing. We wanted to build it strong. We were willing to sacrifice. How many people have ever heard John Maxwell speak? He has a concept called, if you want to give up, you got to go up. And I don't think that there's very many people that would have been willing to do what my brother and I did. You know, I was 24 and he was 42 at the time that we were both living with my sister. And so you can imagine it's bad enough being 24 years old living with your sister. But imagine being 42 with four kids. Right. And so I'll always have a lot of respect for my brother, Mike. And then it was a funny story that we shared a bedroom, and it was a room probably about the size of this stage. We had a phone and a fax, and there was like a maybe like a queen size bed. And then Mike, this is a true story, he had a sleeping bag on the floor. And the director was probably similar to the director here. And it took him about 3 months to go to the director position. And it was weird. But as soon as he made director, I moved over in the bed and I let him sleep with me at night. Weird thing. Some people say I was sleeping my way to the top. I don't know. Until you guys aren't sure about me yet here in Utah. But it's really a true story. Two grown men sharing a bed. And we would go to the conventions and we would share rooms. And we were just two guys that no matter what, we were going to be successful. No matter what. We were going to the top. We were going to the top. Failure was not an option. And there were many, 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 many times during the journey that it just didn't look good. And right before we went out of business, you know, it was a privately held company. Some of you we worked in that company together. It was a privately held company. And so we didn't know how good the company was doing or how bad the company was doing. We thought they were doing okay. When we got to our convention, we realized, and I had done, we were doing pretty well in that company. They invited 20 of us to come about 2 days before the convention started. We learned that we were being bought by a company formerly known as Prepaid Legal Services. And I was so mad. I was so upset. Many of you in the room would probably feel the same way. Imagine if you came to a seminar and you realized that you were going to be marketing a total different product, a total different compensation plan, and all the people that you had promised, I'm going to the top, I'm going to be rich, I'm going to be free, I'm going to have everything I want. It seemed like that had all been flushed down the toilet. And I was sad. You know, I literally sat in my hotel room. I remember they gave me back then, it was a Profiles of Success that was about that thick. Some of you remember that. And I looked at some of the people in the Profiles of Success. There was actually a guy named Happy. Right? The guy's name was Happy. You remember that. His name was Happy. And I go, if this guy named Happy could make $20,000 a month, I know that we can do it. And it was page after page after page of people like Mike Dorsey and Larry Smith, you know, people like Dave Savule and Clee Pickens, and example after example, all great people, but I didn't think they had worked any harder or any sharper than us. And we just decided to go to work. And, you know, the first 4 years, though, is where we really paid our price. And how many people have ever heard or read a book called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell? He also wrote The Tipping Point. And you probably know the next point I'm going to make. He said there's one chapter there called 10,000 Hours. Right? And I know as I meet a lot of people in Legal Shield, we all pretty much have the same questions. How can I be successful at a faster pace than I'm doing it right now? And the reality is the answer, I believe, to every question is you haven't put in your 10,000 hours yet. 10,000 hours is a long time. And in this book, The Outliers, they go and study some of the most successful people in different industries. The Beatles. You know the Beatles used to play 8 hours a day, 7 days a week? Right? They studied Bill Gates. Bill Gates used to consume himself in front of a computer. Hours and hours and hours. So number one, you have to sort of love what you're doing. Would you guys agree with that? Like if you don't like building a Legal Shield business, it's going to be hard to put in your 10,000 hours. So even if you don't like the prospecting, maybe you don't like following up, maybe you like don't like shaving and going to these darn meetings all the time, but you got to find something about the business that you like that allow you to be in it for 10,000 hours. Does that make sense? What the heck am I talking about up here, Ryan? So anyway, we put in our 10,000 hours. So when we got to Legal Shield, we had the experience, we had the contacts, and we knew what we were doing. So now I'm going to just talk to a little bit to the new people. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit to the new people about what it takes to be successful. Number one, I read something on Facebook yesterday. It was by one of the top leaders in Mary Kay, and she was just a great saying. I have a lot of respect for other companies like Mary Kay that have been around for a long time. In fact, a couple summers ago, we had at our summer retreat, we had a woman named Pat Fortenberry that wrote a book called More Than Makeup. And it's one of the best books about network marketing, if you're taking notes today, that I've ever read. It's called More Than Makeup. And it was about how this lady built, over about a 30-year period, built a Mary Kay business. Well, this one lady on Facebook a couple days ago put, I'm too blessed to be stressed. Isn't that a great affirmation? Too blessed to be stressed. And so I know that the most important thing that you bring to the table continually here is your attitude. Attitude is everything. Whether it's Paul Meyer talking about it or Jim Rohn, attitude is everything. So let's first talk about what it takes to cultivate a great attitude. And I use the word cultivate, not get, because it's not something that you get and you have forever. right? And I'll be up here, and I'm the worst offender of this. You know, I'll be so in a great mood one day, and I'm like the most miserable person, quite frankly, to be around. I can be moody. So I'm going to tell you right up front that if there's anybody that breaks this rule of having a good attitude, it can be me, but you want to just get yourself back on track. So there's four things to cultivating a great attitude. Number one is you want to be a reader. If you want to be a leader, you got to be a reader. And we all talk about this, but the reality is that, you know, if you're not growing, you're going out of the business. And, you know, I have so much respect for the people that are here today and continue to be students of this industry and of this business. You know, there's an old saying that you got to know the game that you're in. And Frank O'Coin once said to me that if you say these three or four phrases, then you're on your way out. I've already heard that before. How many people have heard somebody say that? I've already heard that before. I've already tried that before. I've already seen that before. Right? And when you're saying these things, what you're doing is you're closing your mind to all possibilities. So I recommend a very simple process. I've been taught this by my mentors, is just by reading 10 pages of a good book every day. Now, the single act of you reading 10 pages isn't going to catapult you to success, but it's the compounded effect over time of you and your organization doing that. I'll give you an example. How many think it's reasonable to expect that you could get 10 other people to buy into the system of reading 10 pages a day? You could do that, right? So if you went and read 10 pages a day, and let's say that, you know, you took a bunch of days off, and let's just say that you did a 250 days out of the year, right? Give you almost half the time off, because it's such a hard, strenuous thing to do is to read 10 pages a day. So that means at the end of the year, you'd have read, what, about 2,500 pages of good information that's going to help improve some area of your life. How many think that compounded effect is going to be useful for you? But what if you had 10 people in your organization doing it? Now you have 25,000 pages of solid information happening on a continual basis. Would that be powerful? You bet it would. And that's the idea. It's not so much what you do, but it's what you can inspire other people to do at the same time. The second thing that I did to continually cultivate a great attitude, I still do it today, and even sometimes when I'm not in such a great mood and life is, you know, hitting you or whatever, I stick in an audio tape. So the second thing is to continually listen to audio tapes in your car. Make your car a rolling university, especially for some of the enthusiastic young folks that I could see. Is, you know, we shape our mind by the kind of thoughts that we have and what we let into our mind. Garbage in, garbage out. And so many people in society, 95% to 97% do what? They turn on the radio and they're in essence building somebody else's dream and not their own. I mean, I've got big dreams, but I wanted to live my dreams. I was willing to have little dreams like, you know, listening to the radio, listening to Michael Jackson or other people. I don't really have to do that. I'd rather spend 10, 15, 20 minutes a day just getting motivated by listening to positive information. A couple people that I really like that I recommend. Number one, Art Williams. If you're taking notes, Art Williams is great. He's got a CD set called The Art of Recruiting. One of the best I've ever heard in this industry. Another one is Jim Rohn, R-O-H-N, Jim Rohn. There's so many great voices out there, and sometimes we get so we just have such a limited view of really what's possible because, you know, maybe in Legal Shield we listen to these two or three people, and you think, well, those are the two or three I should listen to. There's a lot of great people out there with a lot of great ideas. Maybe it's from your own church, maybe it's from your ministry, but there's so many voices out there that you can be inspired to. But how many agree the first two things are pretty easy to do? Right? But they're also easy not to do. It's easy to let a day go by and not read. It's easy to let a week or even a month or sort of get off track a little bit. The third thing that we do that we really have to watch, and I'm going to have you do this exercise really quickly, is the law of associations. You become like the people that you spend the most amount of time with. And they said it's usually about five. About five people have the biggest impact on you. So what I want you to do really quickly is jot down the initials of the five people that you believe have the biggest impact on your life, your thinking, everything that you do. Maybe the people you spend the most amount of time with. Now, it could be somebody like Jim Rohn, if you really are fanatical about listening to audio tapes. You know, if you have five children, maybe it's all five of your children that have the biggest impact on you. But what I want you to do, and you might want to move from the person next to you if you know them very well for this next part, is I want you to put a plus or minus by their name or by their initials. Right, like mine would be MM for Mike Mealy, and I'd put a plus. KM for Kim Mealy, I'd put a plus. Okay, and you got to look at that list and be really honest with yourself. When you approach them with a good idea, do you feel hesitant because they're going to shoot you down and discourage you? You know, if you've got five minuses on there and five people that are going to discourage you rather than encourage you, that's tough. I love what John Addison says. He says, if you can't change the people around you, change the people around you. He said, don't let the people that don't matter, matter. Such an important thing. Jim Rohn says that people won't you know, yank you off course, but we'll allow them to nudge us off course, right? And sometimes it's so subtle. Like, you ever just don't feel like going to a briefing? I mean, I've been doing this 17 years, so it's been a lot of Tuesday nights where I don't feel like going to a briefing. And you can always tell the solution that you're looking for by the person that you go to for answers, right? Like, I have a sister. She's incredible. She owns her own ad agency. But any chance that she gets to help make me more comfortable and feel better, she'll take it. Like, for instance, I'll say something like, yeah, I just don't think I'm going to go to the meeting tonight. She goes, how many meetings can you really go to? You've worked so hard for so long. Do you really have, you know, and then, you're right, I have. Do I really need to go to that meeting, right? Where even though she's a good-intentioned person, I love her to death, she's my own sister, you got to be careful the amount of influence that you let other people have on you. Does that make sense? But I'm telling you, that's a powerful list. You look at that list, and I can pretty much guarantee that list, if that's a truthful list, that you make about the same money as the five people on that list. You probably talk a lot like them. You probably do a lot of the same social activities, probably have a lot of the same habits. If they go to the gym, you go to the gym. If they don't, you don't. And I'm going to tell you, the best thing that you can do is get out of your comfort zone. And what do you got to do with those people? Well, sometimes, and it sounds harsh, but you're going to have to disassociate. And that's the most drastic of situations. You're going to have to disassociate altogether, right? Other times, you just have to, you know, change the time around. Some people you can spend, you know, 3 hours with, but not 3 days, right? Especially during this holiday season. How many people know what I'm talking about? There's other people you can spend 3 minutes with, but not 3 hours. But you have to right now, in building your own business and being an entrepreneur and be disciplined and with attitude is everything, you can't let those people have an effect on you. Does that make sense? Number four, affirmations. Now, a lot of people think this is, a little hokey or whatever, but I'm going to tell you one of the best exercises that I did when I got started to cultivate a great attitude is I made a list of the 10 qualities that I wanted to have. Like, I was so scared to even get in front of people when I first started in this industry 17 years ago. Petrified. How many people know what I'm talking about? Right? And what I started doing is I started writing things down like, I am a dynamic public speaker. You know, I'm a great recruiter. You know, I like myself and I love my work. Right, I'm too blessed to be stressed. But writing down 10 or 20 things, however many you want, as affirmations, and then posting them everywhere you can see them. Your subconscious mind will go to work for you if you give it the right orders. Okay? So many times that people aren't very clear about where they want to go and they don't have affirmations. But I found that those are the four things to help you cultivate a great attitude. Now, I want to take it one step further. There's also some diseases of attitude. And I learned this from Jim Rohn, but it's also right in the book, Think and Grow Rich. If you were able to make it past the halfway mark, that's a hard book to make it all the way through. I don't think I've ever made it all the way through myself, but if you fast forward a little bit towards the end of the book, it has something called the diseases of attitude. Okay, these are diseases. Just like any disease, if you get a little bit, it can spread throughout your whole body. It can kill you. It can kill your organization. Number one, worry. How many people either worry or know somebody that does? I saw a sign on a church once. It said, worry is negative goal setting. Right? Because in goal setting, what do we teach and what do we talk about is focus on what you want and think about it all the time. And what worriers do is they focus on the result that they don't want and they think about it all the time. And what kind of situations in life do they wind up attracting to themselves exactly what they don't want? You become what you think about most of the time. Okay, so worry is number one. And a lot of times people think they're actually helping the situation. Well, don't you think you should be worried about this? Actually, I don't think I should be worried about it. Yeah, I'll take the proper measures to make sure it goes the way that it should go, but I absolutely am not going to sit around and worry about it and look at all the negative situations that might come as a result of it. Does that make sense? Number two, doubt. 1 ounce of doubt and you're out. Again, this is a disease of attitude. How many know somebody? We call them the doubting Thomases. Well, I'd like to be the devil's advocate on this one. Well, I don't do the business with the devil or any of his advocates, quite frankly. But they, right? And I'll tell you one thing. It's like right now on Facebook, right? There's some people, our company's in transition right now. There are some people that were leaders in our company that are doing other things. And I tell you, every time I see that on Facebook, even though I've made over $5 million with this opportunity, I'm just being transparent. It creates a little bit of tiny doubt in my own head. So you know what I did? I deleted anybody that has left to go do another company from my Facebook. Everybody. Personal friends. Very, very good friends. You should see some of the texts I got. Hey, man, all we've been through in 17 years and you're going to defriend me on Facebook? And it's like, seriously? Anyway. But listen, this is you know, this is my strongest asset right here, is my brain and how I think about things and how I look at things. And if I'm going to let doubt be a part of that, I'm not going to be as effective as I could be. Number two, doubt. Number three, pessimism. As you know, it's the opposite of optimism. A famous doctor once said that pessimists can accurately describe a situation, and they're usually right. Optimists are healthier and live longer. I'll take two. I'll go with B, right? And we all know people like this. It's almost the same as worriers and doubters. Sometimes they're the same people. Number four, indifference. What's the opposite of indifference? Passion, right? When I'm out there recruiting somebody, if I ran into a guy like Dave Hall, you know, Dave's passionate about what his beliefs are. He's passionate about the way that he sees the world, just because I know him, and I'm the same way. Now, I might run into a prospect like Dave that says, you know what, I've heard about that legal shield and the lawyers stink, and I've heard about that and this and that. But I tell you what, I'd rather have that than somebody that's just a sheep and does everything that I tell him to do, but is so indifferent. Like, you ever meet somebody at a convention, you're like, man, is this great? And they're like, it's okay, I'm going to go back and look over my notes and everything. You know, they don't want to get too excited, right? Because they're indifferent. I'd rather take somebody like Dave and just keep dripping on him. And one day, if the remote possibility exists, that I could bring him into the business and have him be passionate, as unpassionate he was against it, be passionate for it, I'll take somebody like that every time. Okay, number four, indifference. Number five, indecision. Hey, man, we're going to Oklahoma City. Well, I'm going to see how the year rolls out. You know, I've got something like that. Don't make a decision too fast, right? Man, you got to make a decision and go. If it's wrong, plan, do, review, and go on from there. It's right, great, you're that much further. Imagine if you were at your house and you say, hey, listen, I'm thinking of going to the grocery store. And you knew there were maybe five stoplights on the way to the grocery store. Wouldn't it be silly if you waited until every light was green before you left the house? But that's what a lot of people do. Thank you. You guys are starting to get some of my stuff. I love it. Number six. I learned this this next one from the Hughes brothers, the Hughes family. They moved to Southern California a bunch of years ago when we were out there, and one of them had a rubber band on his arm. And I said, well, what's that for? And he goes, well, anytime we complain or say something negative, we snap it, right? So I was like, I'm doing that. And everybody in my organization within a week had rubber bands on their arms, and boom, and it hurts. Try it. But I'm going to tell you, one of the best things that you can do is to do that exercise. I think what kills our business, what kills new associates, what kills a lot of the enthusiasm is us, is the complaining that happens before the meetings, after the meetings, during the meetings, and stuff like that. And the reality is that, yeah, this is a hard business. But you know, by verbalizing how bad things are, if there was a problem with the law firms or this, guess what? It's not going to help anybody. Every company, every great company has challenges. Every great company has good points and bad points. You have to find the one that is best for you and commit to doing it, right? So complaining is never going to be a good solution. And I recommend that you have a very strict policy like we do at our meetings, that the minute that you park that car and start to come into a meeting, and I can tell it because it's such a positive environment here, that you guys probably have policies like that where you leave your problems in the car, right? And think about somebody that you know right now that complains all the time. Now physically feel what it feels like if they just walked into your house right now and just started to complain about something. We've all heard the thing, you either brighten up the room or you dim the room. Don't be a dimmer. Be somebody that lights up the room. Okay, so number six is complainer. And number seven, very closely related, is blame. Blame, 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 blame. I would have had more success, but my regional managers can't run a good meeting. I would have had more success, but my upline, they're just not as supportive as they could be. My downline doesn't do anything. That company, man, who's making the decisions down there? Those law firms, this, those law firms, that. And what it does is, the good news if you're somebody that blames is it takes all responsibility away from you, so you never have to worry about being the person that caused the problem, right? That's the good news, maybe, okay? The bad news is that you're disempowering yourself every single time you do it. That if you don't think that you have control over the situation, you're not going to do what's necessary to go out there and be successful. But I'm telling you, it's so liberating when you can take responsibility. Like I personally, this is a good turnout, but when I show up somewhere, even if I don't have an associate in the room, if the place isn't packed, I personally take responsibility for it. Personally take responsibility for everything, even if it's not your fault. personally take responsibility. It'll make you so much stronger. It's empowering to know that you can make a difference. So those are the diseases of attitude. And you just want to, Mike and I did a training in Denver a couple weeks ago. And one of the associates on our team, nice enough lady, known her, she's been with us for 10 years. And she sent us one of the coolest emails after. And she said, you know, I want to let you know, I sort of thought everything was going okay, but when you went over those diseases of attitude, I realized that so many of these things I let creep into my life and the way that I thought and the way I interacted with people. So thanks for doing that. And, she's doing whatever it can to get rid of those diseases. Right? Does that make sense? You guys like that so far? Awesome. What I'm going to do now is just cover a little bit about what I do to get a new associate started. Okay? And it's the same thing I did when I first got started in this company 13 years ago, and it's the same thing that I would do today. So who is fairly new with Legal Shield that's in maybe their first 30 days or so, even their first couple weeks? Great. Okay. Hi, Karen. How are you? I can tell you're very enthusiastic already. You're leaning up on your chair. No, I'm serious. What? Not everything is a joke here. It's her birthday? What does that have to do with anything, Gabby? All right. Everybody say happy birthday, Karen. And Karen, is it okay if I use you as an example? Interact? Great. And Karen, what's your background? What do you do now? Great. Awesome. And what'd you like best about it? Mm-hmm. Sure. Cool. There's something called a game plan interview, which is also known as our first step training. And if you go to your website, you can download, I think it's, 4 pages now with the list and everything like that. But there's 8 things on there, Karen, that I think are imperative. And maybe your sponsor went through this with you. Maybe you got it also at the new basic training. But I'm going to go over with it today, and I'm going to work with Karen, just like I personally recruited her. And the thing about a system, it's the same every time. The word system stands for save yourself some time, energy, and money. And every time we get somebody started, we do the exact same thing. Okay? And I'll share with you why very briefly. Is, you know, a lot of people come into the business and they want to go, you know, do I market memberships or do I recruit? To me, in building a business, it doesn't really matter what I do. But recruiting is one of the keystones of how we built the business, okay? And so we've marketed somewhere about 500 to 600 memberships at this point in 13 years, okay? We've recruited somewhere about 250 people, maybe more, maybe less, okay? We've earned about $5 million in income. And so what I like to do is, where'd the money come from? Well, less than 1% of it was from personal sales. Right, so I'm not going to teach you how to sell memberships, okay? But 99% of it was from building a team. And if you actually do the math, every time we brought in a member, on average, we got paid about $300 of all the memberships we sold, counting the residuals and everything calculated in. Every time we've recruited somebody, and I got this number because I took the number a few years ago. We had recruited about 200 people at the time and had made about $4 million. So if you just do the simple math, that's about $20,000 every time we recruited anybody. Okay. Now, I bet my numbers are no different than most of the people in the room, in that 70% of the people that we've gotten to give us $149 or $249, that handshake was the last handshake, unfortunately. They never even bothered to rip the cellophane off the package, and it's a pretty easy cellophane to rip off. It's not a hard package to open. They never made it to a meeting. They never made their first sale. So 70%. And I found in my research in this industry that that's about average. But what we did is we took the 30%. That 30% led us to the millions. Does that make sense? So if you average it out, it was $20,000. So every time I got somebody started, like Karen, and they give me $149, I'm going to do everything I can to help get that business to 1,000 memberships on average, right? Because we recruited a couple hundred people, and we've marketed close to 400,000 memberships. So every person has led us to 1,000 to 2,000 memberships if you do the math like that, right? Now, I do conference calls twice a week. I've been at every four big events every year for the last 13 years. So you reinforce it by all the other stuff that you do. But the reality is it all starts with recruiting and getting somebody off to a great start. So what we did over time is we came up with the 8 things that are so important that we discuss in that first 24 to 48 hours. Not 2 weeks down the road, not a month down the road, but when Karen gives me her check or credit card for $149, right away, while her excitement level is high, right? Her anxiousness, she's anxious up here and her knowledge is low, is I want to decrease her anxiousness, if that's a word, and increase her awareness on what we're doing. Okay? So the very first thing that we're going to do is we're going to meet for about 45 minutes to an hour. We're going to meet in a place where all the phones are turned off and we can totally focus on this. And the very first thing that we're going to do, and these are all exactly on your first step training forms, so I'm not deviating from that at all, is I want to find out, Karen, why you decided to join Legal Shield. And usually if it's somebody you don't know that well, it's going to be a surface answer. Hey, I want to make some extra money and, you know, my kids are important and stuff like that. What I'll try to do is I'll tell Karen my story a little bit. Karen, I got fired from my last job and it was humiliating. And I'll open up a little bit and I'll share with her why I'm committed to build this business. And so, Karen, if you had to just say in 30 seconds or so and, you know, without all the people, you know, pretend all the people aren't here listening, it's just me and you in a coffee shop maybe or whatnot, sitting down, what would you tell me is the reason, the real reason that you decided to start a Legal Shield business? Mm-hmm. Sure. And what does freedom mean to you? And if you just maybe an example or two, what are some things that are important to you that you would do if you had all the time and all the money? Okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. And how, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important are your children to you? Okay. And on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is your freedom? Okay. Have you ever owned your own business before? Sure. Yeah. But you know in business from being around it all these years that there's ups and there's downs. Right? And you have to ask yourself, because I think it's important to point out, what's going to make you quit? Because most people quit eventually. And I know you're excited now, and I know that if no one was in the room, you'd probably be jumping up and down yelling, Eagle Shield, I love it, right? But that day will disappear, whether it's next week or in a couple of years. And what's it going to be? Like, for me, the only thing that would make me quit Legal Shield is if I felt there was some dishonesty going on, you know, or if I had to do something out of my integrity to build my business. I can't think of another reason that I would quit. Is there any reason that we can identify now to help avoid that? Mm-hmm. Okay, so feeling comfortable would be more important than your freedom and your children? Okay. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, and sometimes that's going to be there and sometimes it's not. You know, everybody that was ever above me in this industry has quit. Brian Crothers, number two money earner in their company, doesn't have an upline, right? So it's like if you leave, you're out as I'm not getting support, right? Like if that's an out for you, then sometimes your mind, like if you're not having success and it's rejection, and it can be a frustrating business, there's good parts to it too, but sometimes if you have an out, like you'll even, your mind will like almost trick yourself into believing that you're not having support. You know what I mean? And it's almost back to the blame thing. And so, would it be okay from time to time, if I feel like you're going off course just a little bit, to remind you of why you're doing this for your children and your freedom and making sure that you're getting all the support?
That's absolutely
awesome. Awesome. Let's hear it for Karen. We're going to continue to work with her. But and I don't usually get that intense with a new person. I was just sort of an example that I was doing in front of everybody. That's number one, is I want to find out why she's doing it. You know, one more question. If you had 20 grand a month coming in right now, what would you do? And you didn't have to work for it. Yeah. What would you do every day, though? What would you do?
Every day, I would spend time with my
grandma. Okay, great. Okay, cool. Second thing is, do you understand the fast track qualification process? That's number two. Okay, explain it to me.
Okay, in the original for 30 days.
Right.
Or you could extend it through this class.
Okay. Wonderful. And I'm, you know, exactly. She could do that. She had a better meeting than I did today. That's great. Good job. And most people never set goals in their life. It's just the way we're conditioned. Let's set some goals right now. Okay. Goal number one, when's your goal starting right now to fast start qualify?
I'm
Okay, great. So Sunday would be a good goal?
Yep.
Do you have it written down? Okay. Sure. Well, you know, because it's been really proven that if you write down goals, they're more likely to come true. Okay, so great. So we're going to go over the Fast Start qualification process. We're going to cover that. Number three is we're going to start making a list. All right? Now, because I've been doing this a long time, I know that when we make a list, for most people, they write down a couple of names, or they really spend some time thinking about it, or they might bring 10 or 15 or 20 names to the table. Do you have a list right now?
Yeah, it's not complete.
Okay. And how many names would you say are on it?
A couple hundred.
Okay. Are you on Facebook?
Yeah, but I haven't used it yet.
No, I don't want you to use it. I just want to know how many friends you have. I don't recommend using it. About 50 friends on Facebook? Cool. Do you have a holiday list of people that you sent cards to or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Outside of your 9 children, 9 grandchildren, do you have a big family? Outside of those? Where do they live?
Mostly in this area.
And okay, great. And who's the most successful person you know? What does he do? Really? Sounds like a good person to make on the list. Would you feel comfortable calling is it your cousin and saying, hey, listen, I've just got involved with an exciting new company. And in fact, I just got out of a meeting with a gentleman that's running for the Attorney General of the state of Utah. And it's a very serious project that I'm working on. Would it be okay if I sent you some information just because I wanted to see what you thought of it? Do you think you could do that?
Honestly, for him, I'm a little shy.
Yeah.
I think
that sure. And this isn't for you, Karen, but this is for everybody, is like your comfort level and all that stuff is it seems like it's everything to you right now. But I'm going to tell you, when your desire is higher than your fear, all that other stuff goes away. When you want it so bad, there's no uncomfortableness. And it doesn't happen right away for everybody, but it's a zone that you get into where your belief is unshakable in the company, the industry, yourself, where you feel like you're blessing somebody by sharing it with that person. Right? Now, a common thing, Karen, that most people do is just like you're doing with your cousin, is I prejudge my brother Jim. My brother Jim was a school teacher that brought in the other school teacher who wound up being a massive success story. But my brother Jim didn't even make my initial list of 100. And I was down in Florida visiting my parents at the time, so I was taking a break from staying with my sister to go move in with my parents just for a couple of weeks. And the last day that I was there, you know, my dad's a retired New York City deputy chief and stuff like that. And he goes, hey, you think you'll get your brother Jim in that business you got? I said, I don't know, Dad. I said, he's sort of lazy, you know. He's like, yeah, you're right. He is sort of lazy, but I wonder if he would do it. I said, I sort of wonder if he would do it, too. Anybody ever see the movie Trading Places with Eddie Murphy? So we decided to make a dollar bet on my brother, right? And he goes, I'll bet you a dollar you can't sign him up by the time you leave. And I was leaving in the morning. I was like, game on, right? So we had dinner, the four of us, my parents, and they're cleaning the dishes, and we nodded, and we gave a little wink. I said, oh, Jim, before you take off, I said, I've got an application. I want to see if you want to get started with prepaid legal. I never said I was going to get started with it, you know. And I was like, all right, I just want to know because I'm flying out tomorrow. If you don't get going now, you're not going to be able to position yourself. And I think we're going to have a lot of people coming in under you, but it's up to you. Well, you know, within a minute, he had given me a Social Security number, which means I had him, right? Just wanted to think he was social, and I had him. And honestly, I wouldn't have pushed so hard if my dad and I weren't kidding around and had the bet. Right? We go upstairs to his loft where he was staying at he actually still lived with my parents at the time. And he gets on the phone and starts calling like his first 5 or 10 people. And you ever watch somebody make phone calls and they're so bad that you want to quit? That's how it was. And it was just like, I'm like, don't say that. Don't do that. You know, and it was like so bad that I really felt bad. I really felt bad that I had recruited him. And I was new in the business. I had only been in a couple months myself. So I was like, man, this is harsh, right? So he decides to stick with it. A couple months later, he calls me up and he says, I was back in town. He says, there's a guy I want you to sit down with. And it wound up being Chip Humphrey. But if I had prejudged him, and I actually did prejudge him, which is what a lot of people do. And I'm going to tell you something. It's not who you know. And it's a hard concept to get because you can't see exponential growth. It's who they know, and it's who they know, and it's who they know. If you very often at an Oklahoma City or a big event, we'll have a breakout session of maybe 500 people, and I always do this exercise. I say, okay, if I personally recruited you, if Mike personally recruited you, or Kim personally recruited you, we're going to do a little recognition. This is just for people that we've recruited personally. We want you to stand up now, make your way over to the side, and line up. And we want you to just hear, you know, your name and your background. we look around. Not a soul. Not one person. Not one person. Right? Now, that means that I'm probably not a good recent recruiter because I'd have a few people and sometimes there were. But out of a room of 500 associates that were all on our team, we hadn't personally recruited one of those people. So it's not about who you know, right? When we come into the business, we think of the 100 to 200 people that we know and we judge, we don't judge, we judge, we don't, and we try to go through those people. Every person knows at least 200 people by their first name. So those 200 know 200. You have 40,000 people that you have access to. Right? We're looking for the one percenters, a Brian Crothers, a Darnell Self, a Dave Savula, people like that. How many one percenters are there in 40,000 approximately? 400, right? So there's 400 people that you have somewhere on your list or their list that could be a major player. All you need is one, two, or three of them to be majorly successful in this company. But we're so worried about thinking what the other people think about us. Okay? So, Karen, the biggest thing that I'm going to ask you to do when we're making your list is just dump your head out on paper. And if you can think of somebody's name, it would be like if I had a stack of $100 bills, right? And every time you wrote down a name, I handed you $100 as long as you could prove they're a real person. You kept a Mickey Mouse on your list, right? Another $100, another $100. If I told you right now that I was going to give you $100 cash for as many people that you could think of in 10 minutes, how many people do you really think that you can have on your list? 800, 900, 1,000. Oh, what was that mailman? Not the one we have now, but from about 20 years ago. I remember Joe West. I'll look him up, right? And you start doing that. But I'm going to tell you, you never know who's on your list. It's one of the most powerful things that you could do. Okay? Ask any leader in this company, and they'll go through their whole organization. I guarantee your top five or six people are not people that you personally brought in. Okay? So we're going to keep this moving. Okay? I've got your list now. The next thing that we're going to do is we're going to narrow your list down to your top 10. Okay, Karen, let's pretend that you and I are the CEO and the president of a new company, and our job is to put together a sales force all across the United States and Canada, the most successful people that we know to help run our company. We need a chief financial officer. We need a CEO. We need the 10 sharpest people that we know, right? Maybe your cousin would make that list. Who do you know, the other 9 people that are just as sharp as your cousin? Right? And we come up with a pretty good mega list. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the expense of taking those 10 names, and I'm going to send a package to those 10 people from me. I'm going to put recently Karen and I have become business associates. She's very excited. She just launched a new business with Legal Shield. She wanted me to get you some information right away. The less I say, the better. I'll put a DVD in there, right, a sticky note, and a business card. Okay? I put my phone number on everything because if that person has questions, I want them to call me and not you. I'll put your number on there as well. But if that person is ready to get started and maybe you're not doing Legal Shield in a month or a year, I want to make sure that person and I are able to communicate. Does that make sense? The only reason I do this is I was traveling a couple years ago in Bend, Oregon, and this nice couple came up to Kim and I and they said, hey, listen, can we buy you guys dinner? And my answer to that is always what? Absolutely. I love free things. And so I think one of the best training questions that you can get when you sit down with somebody is, hey, how'd you get started in the business? You can learn more from that than you'll ever learn, in my opinion, at a Super Saturday, just listen to somebody talk for a couple hours, because it's a real-life example of what helps somebody make a decision, right? So I'm sitting with this couple, and they say, well, it's a funny story. We got a DVD in the mail from a guy named Brian Crothers, you know, and they were executive directors in the business, so they'd been doing really well. And I said, well, how'd you know Brian? They said, we didn't, but a guy that we know in Maryland that had signed up with Brian and then quit knew us, and Brian sent out 10 DVDs, and we actually called up. Brian didn't follow up with us, but we called up and followed up, and they were a whole executive organization. Probably made hundreds of thousands of dollars just off that one DVD with the couple, right? But how did he know to send it to that one couple? He didn't. He sends it to everybody, right? Brian sometimes recruits 10, 15, 20 people a month. I don't know if he does as much anymore, but that means for every person, he had 10 packages going out. And on a very average day at our house, you can see us stacking up 10 people's packages. And maybe I signed up Karen, and she did a little bit, but she signed up somebody else. If Karen wasn't going to do it, I would send out those 10 packages for her. What do I care? I just added 10 people to my list. Okay? Has everything that I've done with Karen so far been duplicatable? Right? We've talked about her why. We've talked about how to fast start qualified, making her list, and we've talked about getting those top 10 packages out as soon as possible. Okay? The fifth thing that we're going to do, Karen, if I told you there was one thing, and I've studied thousands of people that have come into Legal Shield and other network marketing companies, and I found that there's one thing that people that go on to have success do, and people that don't, they don't do, they decide not to do this. If there was one thing, would you want me to share that with you? Okay. I'll share it with you, but the problem is when I explain it, Then you'll send it through your own mind and filter it, and you decide whether it'll work for you or not. So I'm not going to tell you what it is. Unless you promise me in advance that you'll do it, and I can promise you it won't cost you any money, and it won't be painful. So if you'll give me your promise, I'll tell you what it is. Great. You're going to do a private business reception next Friday night at 7 o'clock. Right? And that's what it is. It's a private business reception. But you see how I sold it to her before I even told her what it was? I made her commit to it before it hit her mind and she started filtering whether she had her place was too big or too small, it was a gated community, or people would like her house or not like her house, or whether people that she knew would come or not come. The reality is the successful model of a Legal Shield business is when you get somebody started, they do a private business reception. And they don't get to decide whether they do it. As a good sponsor, you decide. If Karen doesn't have success and I'm her sponsor, it's absolutely my fault. I take full responsibility if she doesn't have the success that she wants. So number five is to have a private business reception. I'm not going to go into a lot of details right now, Karen, but a really successful one looks like making between 40 to 60 phone calls. It's a lot. 40 to 60 phone calls, two-minute conversations. Okay? The conversations, you're asking for help. You're asking for support. You're letting people know that you're excited, that you've got some enthusiasm, that you've got involved in a new business. And just like Dave Savula says, right? What does he say? It'll take 15 minutes. You may or may not be interested. I love that line, you may or may not be interested, because it lets people off the hook right away. Okay? Out of those 40 to 60 phone calls, you'll probably have somewhere between 20 to 30 people that'll give you either a yes or a maybe. Maybe always means no. And so now you've got a list of maybe 15 people that are your confirmation. So it's the day of or the night before, and you're calling them one at a time. Hey, Lucas, it's Steve Melia. Hey, listen, I'm just confirming tomorrow night. Hey, man, it really means a lot to me that you're dropping everything that you're doing and coming over. So I'll see you about 7 o'clock sharp. Sound good? Great. See you tomorrow. You know where I live, right? Great. You know, I didn't ask him if he was coming. I just told him it meant a lot that he was going to come. I find that if you give people an easy out, say, are you still coming? Oh, I'm so glad that you called. I had something come up. And just because something comes up and maybe nobody shows up at your PBR doesn't mean those people are interested. It just means that at this season, we need to work on your inviting skills a little bit, but maybe it just wasn't the right time for a lot of these people. We probably just didn't call enough people. So the day of, you're calling 15 people, you're confirming them. Let's say that somewhere between 5 and 7 show up. Okay, we'll probably have two people that are not interested at all. We'll probably have two or three that get a membership, and we might have one or two that become an associate. But if you're willing to stick with it for a 10-year period like I did, you would realize that one recruit, if you really stuck with it, would be worth $20,000. So would there be a person, if I was really going to do this, and I'm not, but if I was going to say anybody that's willing to make 40 or 60 phone calls and really run a great PBR, if you get at least one recruit, I'd be willing to cut a check for 20 grand today. How many people would do a PBR this week? Okay. It's all how you look at it. Number six. Karen, do you have anything that you're listening to in your car, like Jim Rohn? I love Jim Rohn. Do you know who he is yet?
I'm not right now, but
okay, great. Maybe someone could get her in the room. What I give every new person is the Jim Rohn How to Build a Network Marketing Business. It's just real easy to listen to. He's great. Have you ever heard of Jim Rohn before, R-O-H-N? Okay, but you've never listened to him. You're going to absolutely love him, so we'll get you one of those. But I give every single new person that, because it's sort of like I know Jim is not with us anymore. He passed about a year, maybe a year, 2 years ago now, actually. It was his anniversary the other day. He passed a couple years ago. But let's just pretend that Jim was still alive, right? And Dave is a great seminar promoter and a sponsor. And Dave called you up and said, listen, I am running on like crazy getting ready for the seminar. Is there any way that you could pick Jim Rohn up at the airport, for those of us that know him? How many, if he was still alive, would want to take that opportunity every time? Man, I'd have a list of questions that I want to ask, and I would just be ready to go and stuff like that. The reality is that you have the opportunity to drive Jim Rohn around in your car every single day, right? And sometimes you got to trick yourself. Just drive over to the airport, which is, Dave said it's 10 minutes away, but you drive fast, I can tell. But just go over to the airport and act like you're picking Jim Rohn up and get in your car and even put a seatbelt on for him and, hey, Mr. Rohn, is there one piece of advice that you can give me? And you just turn it on and say, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to get what you got. You know, oh, that's good, right? And so my point is that information is available to be able to drive around and listen to Jim Rohn all the time. That's number six. Number seven, I'm going to go over some real basic things with Karen about your support system and your team. I'm just going to let you know that it's available. This would be a good time. Say Dave is our executive director upline or whatnot. I would call Dave on the phone. I might text him and say, Dave, got a new associate. excited. Her name's Karen. She has 9 children. She has a background in sales, working with small businesses. She's really excited about all different aspects of the business. She's already committed to do a PBR, everything else that we always get somebody started with. And because these 8 things are so ingrained in my organization that we don't even have to talk about those things. He's going to get on the phone and say, well, you know, has Steve talked to you about doing your PBR? Oh, yeah, we're all set to go. And he told me I needed to invite 40 to 60 people and say, yeah, and he'll edify me back a little bit. Steve really knows what he's doing and that kind of thing. But now what we've just shown you is there's support elsewhere. Okay? I'm going to tell you when the next meeting is. I'm not going to say that if you don't go to every meeting for 52 weeks, you'll never be successful, because I'm going to scare you right out of the business. Okay? I'm going to tell you, hey, listen, we've got an event coming up in Oklahoma City. Now, I know you're just getting started and you haven't made any money, but I'm going to tell you one of the best things that you can do is let's get your first $500 to $1,000 so we can reinvest back in your business. Let's do that, okay? So I'm not going to make things so mandatory, but I'm going to tell you when the next conference call is. I'm going to tell you when the next thing is. Not overwhelm you. Tell you where your team website is and things like that, okay? Number 8, I'm going to encourage Karen to use the membership as soon as possible. One of the key ingredients of a successful associate is someone that's a believer in our membership. Okay, so how many agree you can do those 8 things with somebody, right? And I do those 8 things every single time that we get somebody started in the business. So what I'm going to do now is, Dave, we're going to transition and we're going to go into recognition. And I'm really excited about the last part of my training today. I know this was a lot of stuff that was just, the 1-2-3s of how somebody gets started, but sort of advanced stuff of really how to go out there and build a $1 million business here with Legal Shield. I'm excited to share with you guys. So ladies and gentlemen, let's bring back up to the stage the great Dave Hall.
Testing 1-2-3. All right, good deal. Wow, anyone else's hand a little bit sore from taking notes? Do you feel like, even after, going on 12 years in the business, I all of a sudden feel like I've been doing it wrong? Crap. Oh, how many of you have just had an aha moment where you're like, I haven't been doing that in a game plan interview. Oh, I haven't said it that way. I love the way, sold them on the PBR before they even told them they were going to do a PBR. I'm like, how much more effective could I have been over the last 12 years if I would have been doing just little 1%ers like we've been learning today? I just start to think, what could our incomes be if we had it down that good and stuff? So, just another affirmation of why you never want to miss an event. You never know where the puzzle piece that your business is missing is going to be revealed. And some of you today have found that puzzle piece, and we are only halfway through this day. And for everyone in the room, it's going to make your business that much better. It's going to make it that much stronger. Again, I hope you're taking copious notes. And by the way, Mr. Swallow is out in the foyer right now, and he is signing. They look just so tight. I am so excited to go home and get this framed and get it hanging on my wall. To Dave, I love Legal Shield, John Swallow. This is going to make me a stinking fortune. I'm so glad that I have that. I'm going to go get a few copies of this made, get it hanging in my office. I'm going to have to probably take down Dave Cibula's poster because running out of space up there on the wall. But let's start off by, first of all, bringing up our state leadership that makes the tech service for years, but bought it just because I did a quick sit-down presentation with him. First time he's ever sat through a presentation, he was blown away. He was like, I can't believe how good this is. He goes, I'm serious. He goes, I cannot believe how good this company is. He goes, this exceeded all my expectations. And he goes, if I wasn't a civil servant with a conflict of interest, I could kill it in this company. He's just like, seriously, I could go out there. And he goes, that guy on stage that went out and made, $250,000 his first year, he goes, I could kill him. I could kill him. So, I told him, I said, hey, look, the offer's to you, the same that I gave to Mark Shurtleff. When you're done being the Attorney General and you're ready to make some real money, you got my card, you know how to get a hold of me. But isn't that so cool that we have Attorney Generals that are looking at this going, oh my gosh, when I'm done, there's not a conflict, I know where to go to get rich. And legally, do it. So, you guys, if you're as excited as I am for the second half of this set, put your hands together. Bring back the song.
We're going to go. I'm just going to introduce it. The second video that we wanted. You know, I'm watching Dave up here, and I remembered a Jim, as I'm watching him, it's just a great quote by Jim Rohn. It says that that a formal education will get you a paycheck, but self-education will make you a fortune. And, you know, just knowing who Dave was when he first got started and just the process of him, it's been amazing. But that right there is an advertisement for self-education versus a formal education. And so it's so great to see you. You're such a great leader, and you do so great in recognizing people on stage. It's probably one of the best skills that you could have is giving the credit away to other people, and you do a great job of that. So absolutely. Let's hear it for Dave. Big time. And this is going to be a real short video. A few years ago, how many people are around long enough with Legal Shield to remember a guy by the name of David Stecky? Remember David Stecky? A few of us. And the reason we have such a great company today is for people, because of people like David Steck. He worked so hard, only for about 4 or 5 years. He got cancer, and within about 6 or 7 months of getting cancer, he passed away. But he was such an inspiration. I had a chance. I wasn't even really that good friends with him. We were just sort of both platinums. And one day we went to the hospital to go visit him. And as we were driving there, he said, "Hey, listen, they're letting me go today. Can you guys drive me home?" And it was really sort of out of my comfort zone, you know, to do that. Me, Kim, and Mike, the three of us were all there, and he was dying of cancer. He had about a month or so to go. He was rolling down his window, and he was pointing at the grass. He goes, "Isn't that beautiful?" For those of you that remember, "Isn't that beautiful green grass?" And you can smell it. And he was such an inspiration that he inspired us to start a foundation. So we have a foundation that's donated about $250,000 so far. We just go out and promote it, and we've given a little bit of money, but it's mostly just golf tournaments and comedy shows. We do auctions. We've done so much. But we decided about a year ago to sponsor an orphanage in Guatemala. They had a boys' orphanage. They wanted to build a girls' orphanage. And Kim's been heading it up. And it's been tremendous. And so this is just I'm talking a lot about freedom and money today. But I personally believe that those that are given much, much is expected in return. And so this is something that we put together if we can get that up there. If not, I could do it a little bit towards the end. You can't just press on play. That's not going to work. Oh, Macs are good, man. I just got my first one. If you can't do it, it's no big deal. No, it's not. Drokes? Have you been drinking? I'm the only one supposed to be drinking here today. Don't worry. If you can't do it, don't worry about it. All right, I want you guys to keep working on it, and I'll move on. Is that okay? And the minute that you get it, you let me know. But if more than 2 or 3 minutes go by, it's not mandatory. I just thought it would be a nice little piece. Okay? So here's what we're going to do. We're going to launch into our landmines. These are landmines that kill people in the network marketing business. Specifically, obviously, Legal Shield. Okay? Number one. 9 landmines that can kill a new associate. Number one is buying other people's opinions. Buying other people's opinions. I'm reminded, one of the first things I ever heard is the funeral story. And some of you remember Jeff Olson sharing that story many years ago. And it's always been inspirational to me every time. Like when I was in that conversation with Karen a little bit earlier, we were talking about her cousin. I'm always reminded of this story about the funeral. And basically, it was about an article that had been written about funerals. And they said the average funeral, they had studied all these funerals, that the average funeral had, what, about 5 to 10 people that were crying in response to somebody dying, right? Not a big number, you know. And, Jeff, in reading this article, he said, man, his whole life he had been so worried about what other people thought. I mean, think about it, even getting ready today. If you're anything like me, you've got this. Anybody hear voices in your head? Anybody just hear a voice that said you don't hear voices in your head? That's the voice we're talking about, right? But so many times, you know, we're getting ready and we look at the clothes we're going to wear and we go, oh, I don't know if people are going to like that. Or even I'm getting ready and I had this little hair sticking up on my head today and I'm trying to comb down. But people are going to think I'm a little bit less professional because my hair is sticking up a little bit. And all day long, all week long, all year long, we are so worried about what other people think of us. And the reality is they're not thinking much of us at all, are they? You know. So in this funeral story, they went on to say that the biggest determining factor of whether someone will actually go to the burial after the ceremony is what? The weather. This would have been a great day to go in Salt Lake City, right? But unfortunately, if it was your rain and people are ducking out of line going for the diner rather than going to the burial. But we spent our whole life worried about what other people think. So the moral of the story, right, is that if somebody is not going to be at my funeral crying, then do I really give a darn what they think about me or how I live my life or what I do? The best thing about my life is the freedom and the liberation of making my own decision and designing a life that's perfect for me. And it doesn't happen overnight, but over time, if you can, you know, do some of the things that we say about goal setting and just focus on some of the things that you want, it's going to be so important. Any luck? Okay, won't load. Don't worry about it. Can it? You can go to ameliafamily.com and watch this on your own. Ameliafamily.com, M-E-L-I-A, family.com, and we've got this video. I think that's where you're at. I was just telling everyone else they could go to ameliafamily.com. You're confusing me. So number one, buying other people's opinions. And I'm telling you, just in talking to Karen, just that's the biggest thing that we all do is we're so worried about what other people think of us all the time. And I'm telling you, if you can get rid of that one thing, you know, that's going to be one of the best things that you can ever do. It's so liberating to just make decisions and not have to worry about what other people think of you. Number two, lack of structure is what kills a new associate. Lack of structure. So you plop down your $149. Welcome to the world of entrepreneurship, right? Your bathrobe is now your new wardrobe. Your refrigerator, microwave oven, and Facebook accounts are your new coworkers. Your children are your new servants. As they snap your fingers, you will do anything they tell you. You will now pick people up from the airport whenever they call and ask for it, because your friends don't look at your home-based business as a very serious business, do they? And now what you have to do is figure out how to structure your day effectively. Hey, guys, don't worry about it. We're good. So what are some of the things that you can do to create structure in your business? Number one, the very first thing that I would do, even if you've been involved for a long time, is that call a family meeting. You know, call a family meeting with the people that are most important and vital in your business. Even if it's you're a single mom. You know, Karen, this is what I would do with my 9 children. We're having a family meeting, right? What are some of the things that you guys would like to do as a family that we haven't done so far? And let the kids decide. Go to Disney World. Do this. You know, do that. Great. And you just start making a list of all those things. You know, you'd be like a salesperson. If I could show you a way that our family could have all these things with some sacrifices, children, how many would be willing to make some sacrifices, right? Or maybe it's just your spouse, right? Because I'm going to tell you, all of a sudden you start this new business and you're gone on Tuesday nights and, you know, a couple of times a year you're going away to conventions. If you don't have your biggest people in your life on your side, it can be very, very, very difficult, whether they're 2 years old or whether it's your spouse, right? Just one of the most important things. It's called the law of buy-in, getting those people to buy in first. Right? And then realize and having some rules set up around your house that you would just like your regular business. And, you know, if you went and got a job at Walmart or McDonald's, you'd have to be there at 8 o'clock and you'd have to work till 4. And when you were there, you're focused on that activity. It's got to be the same in your business. You got to take the 168 hours of the week. Okay, I sleep for 6 hours a night. Okay, this time is non-negotiable. I have to work here. Sunday night dinner with my family, we do it every week. This is where I go to church. And you got to look at the rest of the week and start picking in, where am I going to prospect? Where am I going to follow up? Am I committed to doing it? There are certain things that have to go into that business. First of all, if you think that you're going to have major success here with not being fanatical about going to a weekly meeting every week forever from now on, you're mistaken. It's one of the sacrifices you have to put up with. Listen, I got a lot of freedom in my life, but there's certain things I don't miss. Weekly meetings, my team conference calls and things like that. Company events. The hardest thing for me doing my 162 tour this year was missing, you know, 2 company events and my team event. And it took a lot of thinking and a lot of buy-in from Mike and Kim and our other leaders before I, even though we have a lot of freedom, before I was willing to make that decision to go for it. But these things are so important as you're structuring out your business. You have to have your goals very clearly defined with your family, but it's got to be like, hey, listen, when mom goes into this office from 6 to 8, Tuesdays and Thursdays, or whatever week it is for you, or day of the week it is for you, nobody knocks on the door unless it's an emergency. That's the time where I'm building my business, right? It's so, so important that you be able to do that. You have to have some rules set up for doing that. Okay. Number three, so lack of structure. You got to get structure in your business. Number three, comparing yourself to other people. We all do it. I mean, I can remember going to my very first convention many, many moons ago, and I was so frustrated because Mike and I, it was the first convention, it was February 5th. We signed up the last week of November, so literally had been in the network marketing industry 2 months, had done really well, had already made about $7,000 in our first couple of months getting going, but we were so frustrated that we had worked as hard as we possibly could, and we're in the same amount of time as everybody else, and other people were way ahead of us, right? And I just couldn't figure it out. What are they doing that we didn't do? And what I realized, it goes back to the 10,000 hours. There's always a story behind the story, right? Brian Crothers didn't come into this company with no experience and take off. He was with ACN. Right? You realize he never made over $1,000 a month with ACN. There's a lot of people right in these front rows that were outproducing Brian Crothers. Right? Then he was in the People's Network. Right? I was in the People's Network, and you know, we were making maybe $5,000 to $10,000 a month on average. He never made over $1,000, maybe $2,000 a month ever. Right? Darnell Self. You know, Darnell Self was also in several companies before he got started. Do you know that Dave Savula has been in this industry for 45 years? You know? He was in this industry for 27 years before he ever got into Legal Shield. Yeah, but he made $1 million his third year. Did he? Or was it his 30th year? You know, but you got to ask yourself, if you're comparing yourself to other people, are you willing to go through what they went through to have what they have? But there's always a story. Don't ever be fooled by the quick success story. Dave and I have seen it so many times. If it's a quick success story, chances are it doesn't have a solid infrastructure. It's built on sand, not on brick and mortar, and it'll go away. It's not built on the solid foundations of this business. So one of the things that you can do when you go to the conventions or even recognition is be inspired by others. And this is hard, but don't be discouraged by other people's success. Does that make sense? Hard to do, but worth it. Number four. Okay, number four. Thinking that your sales skills and prior experience mean anything here. And, you know, and I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news. They do mean some things. Like, for instance, here's a few skills that are transferable. Your attitude, your communication, your work ethic, the network of people that you've built over time, your determination, your persistence, things like that are great. But what makes somebody succeed in corporate America and running their own business is very different than what makes somebody succeed here. And sometimes it takes us a long time to get that. Let's take corporate America or business. Right? If you want it done right, do it yourself. Isn't that the mentality? Right? And for somebody to have a really secure job, they have to be able to do what no one else can do so they'll never get fired. Does that make sense? Here it's totally different. Right? The only reason we've had success is we've helped and teach and trained other people a very, very, very simple system. So in network marketing, it's about dumbing it down to the simple levels and getting a large group of people to do a few very simple things over a consistent period of time. In small business America and corporate America, it's all about you being the champion. In this business, it's about championing other people. Okay? And along with that, maybe you're the best presenter in town. You know, maybe Mark and Leslie, when they sit down with somebody, boy, they know this company up and down, and they can tell them about the history of the company founded back in 1972 as a result of a tragic automobile accident where our founder barely escaped death, right? And they're going through this great story, and people are looking at them going, man, that's good, but there's no way I can do that, right? But I'm telling you, once in a while, you just read the slide like I do right from the slideshow, and it shows other people that they can do the presentation just as easy as you. So thinking that your experience and sales skills will work here, you want to be system-dependent, not people-dependent. People-dependent means that if the people are gone, there goes your team. A system is in place that you can have success with, whether it's you sponsor somebody 3,000 miles away, whether a dud recruits a stud, or somebody 10 levels deep, because there's a system in place, it'll keep duplicating. Make sense? Awesome. Number five, another pitfall that can kill a new associate, lack of commitment or lack of discipline. Successful people are willing to do what unsuccessful people are not willing to do. The difference I've heard between an amateur and a professional is that an amateur does their business when they feel like it. They let their emotions run their business. I'm going to tell you, if my emotions ran my business, I'd be in bad shape. You know, what a professional does is they show up and they do it whether they feel like it or not. And isn't it so many times true when you don't want to go to the meeting or you don't want to make those phone calls, but you make your first one or you make your second one, you get a little bit of confidence going, that you feel great? I mean, I kid around, but I've just been doing this a long time. So I just don't like shaving. I don't like putting on a suit. I'd rather just, you know, chill out and stuff like that. But every time I'm like complaining about going to the meeting, and the minute I get there and I feel a positive energy and the music going, every single time I'm glad that I came to that business presentation. But again, successful people do what unsuccessful people are not willing to do. Commitment is doing the thing that you said you would do long after the feeling that you said it with has left you. I talked a little bit about to Karen when we were doing the game plan interview, the feeling will leave you. Right? You're all jacked up now. Maybe we're at a Super Saturday. It feels so good to have all these other like-minded people in a like direction. But Monday morning when no one else is around, what's your commitment level going to be? What's your discipline level going to be? That's number five. Number six. I love this one. Number six. This is a landmine that most people don't see coming. In fact, they're so excited that they've had a little bit of success that they decide to go full-time in the business. Right? And a lot of people that say they're going full-time are probably taken back when they share it with Dave or they share it with me, and our eyes are like this. You're going full-time? You know, because how many of you would agree, like Jim Rohn says, that $1,000 a month part-time is a great story? Yeah, maybe a new car, your wardrobe is increasing a little bit, you're going on a couple of vacations a year. Like my friend Chip Humphrey has a great story because he's able to have an incredible lifestyle. Before, he was trying to run everything on $32,000. Now he's got $200,000 worth of income because he kept going part-time. The best, and imagine now if he decided to go full-time in the business, he'd go from $200,000 to $100,000. How many would agree that that's a stressful situation? And all of a sudden what happens when you go from part-time to full-time in the business is now what used to be fun is now stressful, right? And I'm telling you, nobody responds well to pressure. Right? Nobody likes to have pressure put on them. And it's not a good deal whether you're relying where your next sale or your associate's next sale has to feed you and your family. The best thing that you can do is to hold on to that job as long as you possibly can until it becomes so obnoxious where you're making so much more money on a part-time basis than you are on a full-time basis. Now, with that being said, if you ask a lot of successful people in the company, a lot of us went full-time right away. Right? I was unemployed when I got involved in this industry. I was making $50 every day when I was a substitute school teacher. Right? So that was easy to walk away from. And I was living with my sister, so I was living rent-free. And she would pay me, because she owned an ad agency, to deliver packages around the New York metropolitan area. She's like, you want to make $75 today? I said, absolutely. She's like, all right, pick up a package and deliver here. And I do it. I didn't tell my team about it, but I did whatever I could to pay my bills. Okay? In this business, the concept is that profits are better than wages. Now, the problem with profits at the beginning is they're not very big. They're like this. But if you want to get huge profits that you'd be able to live on, it's different than wages. Does that make sense to people? And, you know, it's the old saying that I'd rather have 1% of 100 people's efforts than 100% of my own. And, again, just one of the most common mistakes that we see is people go full-time too early. And sometimes, you know, going back to number one is where you buy people's opinions of you, is some people do the wackiest thing because they're trying to put on an image for their team or for their prospects or for their neighbors. Well, what would my team think if I went and got a job? Well, your team's going to appreciate the fact that you're still in the business in 3 years, first of all. You know, your job is not to impress anybody with materialistic things, with a nicer house and nicer cars. And too many times I've seen in this industry where someone's making $50,000 a year, they start spending $60. They go up to $100, they start spending $120. They make $500, they start spending $700. They make $800, they buy 3 homes in Hawaii. They do this, and all of a sudden, they're making decisions that are not best for their business, for their families, and other people like that. The best, you know, that's why we live with our sister for 4 years, because we realize in business it's not how much you make, it's how much you keep. Does that make sense to people? So again, I could hit this one all day long, but going full time too early is usually a very, very bad decision. Number seven, not being aware of the emotional roller coaster. And when I was first in that perfume business, the guy, he made me, when I gave my year commitment, he also made me promise that I would never quit on a bad day, right? And there were a lot of really frustrating days if you've ever been in door-to-door sales. I mean, you come back and you spent $50 on gas, nobody sold anything, and the profits, or even if you sold a bottle of perfume, sometimes it was like a $3 profit, so it was really sort of depressing. And we had this rule where you weren't allowed to quit on a bad day. You know, you have your best day, you come in here and you quit when you're up. And I think that's a pretty good model. And so many times there's ups and there's downs in this business. You know, you get started and, you know, you call home to your spouse and you're so excited at the meeting, and maybe your spouse is really positive, maybe they're not. You know, but either way, you're going to be up or you're going to be down. You know, your first day in the business, you see your neighbor outside and you say, "Hey, listen, I just got started with a new business." They, "Nope, not interested in those pyramid things." And it's like, whoa, right? You come into the Super Saturday like this, and all of a sudden the future attorney general is on stage talking about how he's so impressed with this product and that he owns it himself. And your emotional roller coaster is up here now, and nothing's going to stop me. I am bulletproof, right? And then all of a sudden your negative brother-in-law says, "You are going to get in sales," and you're back down again, right? And I think what happens over time is when, you know, there's four or five areas that you really want to believe in and develop confidence in yourself, in the company, in the industry, in our product, obviously. And when you're solid on all of that, there's, the highs aren't so high and the lows aren't so low. You know, like if I have a new associate come up to me and say, "You're not going to believe it. I've got this guy that used to play for the Lakers and he's excited. And he wants to sign up everybody he knows." I'd be like, "Great, man. You know, we'll do a three-way phone call or something," you know. And I would treat that just like a stay-at-home mom just got started. To me, it's, I'm not going to get way excited about here. And then all of a sudden, you know, my best friend quits. I'm not going to be depressed about it. You know, it's a business. You know, imagine if the owner of a McDonald's, you know, he was this, "You can't believe it. You know, we were down 10% sales today. We only sold, you know, 148 Big Macs. Can you believe it?" And he goes home depressed. And then the next day he's excited, you know, because they sold 200 fish sandwiches on a Friday. Whatever, you know. It's called business. And one of the reasons that we read books and we listen to tapes and we work on our associations is to build that emotional intelligence, if you will, or just that emotional determination and persistency. Again, it's one of the best things that you can do is to be ready for that roller coaster and make yourself the promise that if you are going to quit, I don't ever think quitting is a good idea, to quit on your family or to quit on your freedom and stuff like that. But if you're going to quit on a great day, you know, quit on the day you got your golden app. Quit on the day where people are cheering like crazy for you and see how that feels. I don't think you'll do it. It's like the late, great Wilbur Smith said, "Get started and don't quit." That basically could have ended the training right there. Number eight, you can't ride two horses to success. Okay, you can't ride two horses to success. And, you know, when I first got involved in the network marketing industry, I was like most people, I didn't know too much about it. But what I learned really quickly is that there's a lot of different opportunities here. It's like Jim Rohn talks about when he talks about, "Hey, I'm climbing to the mountain and I'm going to the top and nobody's going to stop me. You're going to see me waving at the top. You're going to see me dead on the side of the road. But there's nothing in between." But all of a sudden, a guy on another mountain starts saying, "This mountain's not as slippery. People are making more money on this mountain. This mountain has a Lexus car bonus." You know? And you start looking over here and you start focusing and you start slipping a little bit because you're what? You're looking over at the other mountain. We were in Guatemala last year, and I'd heard this thing, bless you, I heard this thing before, but I had never really seen it, is there were horses on the street. And there's a lot going on in Guatemala, as you can imagine. And these horses actually had blinders on. You know what the blinders are for? So they couldn't get any trouble, and they would only look straight ahead. You know, I've never seriously considered my 17 years ever doing anything else. I've never even looked at anything else in 17 years. Now, the company that I was with went out of business, and I had the opportunity to join this one if I wanted to, but never, because I realized that every company has its challenges, every company has its good points and its bad points. You got to find one that you believe in, that you'll stick with over time. I don't know how anybody could sign up, quit and start again, you know, quit and start again. And you got to look at some of these people that even have left our company and ask, how many companies have you been in, right? And then look at, and then you start breaking down how many years there were in each company. One gentleman I was looking at, it was like 3 years, he left to go do something else. 4 years, left to do something else. 3 years, left to do something else. And you see sort of a pattern developing here. And so you can't ride two horses to success. It means you can only sell one. You can only look at one opportunity and say, this is the opportunity where we're going to get wealthy. You know, you can't say, "Oh, you don't like that one? How about this one? You like this one?" You ever go to a PBR where they're trying to pitch more than one opportunity at the same time? It's an absolute nightmare, but it's happened before, right? So, you know, we had a leadership call with Brian Crothers and Darnell Self. How many people heard that a few days ago? And I echo a lot of the same things that they said. Do you know that right now there's well over 3,000 companies in the network marketing industry? And you realize that only about 300 of them will still be in business in 5 years? How do you know which one? Well, first of all, I'd pick one that was around for 40, you know, because that might help your chances of success, you know. Now, the only problem with a company that's 40, when I thought when I was 27, is that maybe the opportunity is what? Already passed by. After all, we're at 1.6 market penetration. You know. Then you got to look at other things. You know, Brian Crowther said on a conference call the other day that he didn't want to have to put his pride in his back pocket when he calls somebody and introduces a product or service. And I feel the exact same way. I know that when a family gets a Legal Shield membership, that I can feel good because I've done something good and that we're a step closer to changing the legal system, one family at a time and one business at a time. And the last thing is, I don't think I could ever call up somebody and say, "Hey, Dave, you want to come over to my house and get your face done? I'm going to do facials." So anyway, we've continued to represent this great company for 13 years, and you never have to worry about getting an email from us or a Facebook message or even us sitting on a couch telling you how unhappy we are and that we've decided to join something else, because I believe that, again, you can't ride two horses to success. And pick something you like, stick with it, and go for it. Does that sound pretty good? Awesome. Number 9, landmine of a network marketing business is you think your team's big enough and you stop recruiting. You stop recruiting. You know, you always, the best thing that you can do to teach your team is let them see what you do, not hear what you do. In other words, every opportunity you get, you bring a guest. You know, when Dave Cibula first started building this business, he would go over to someone's house to do a PBR, and he always had another guest with him, right? Because he's like, yeah, I'm starting this guy, but what about my guest, right? And you always want to be thinking like that. You always want to be adding a new line of sponsorship or whatever your structure is like. It's always important that you lead by example and never, ever, ever stop recruiting. I believe that when someone stops recruiting, you know, you're either growing in business or you're dying. How many would agree with that? And you're either going in one direction or not. And if your team and you aren't recruiting, then your business is dying. So those are the just 9 landmines, things that I thought were important, that my partners thought were important. And what I want to do now is just close with 6 things to do right now. Because I know sometimes in a training like this, it's important to go over a lot of useful things. But what's important now? What are the most important things that you could be doing right now with everything that's going on in our company? Number 1, and we're going to spend some time doing this, is to have a specific, clearly defined goal. 6 things you have to have right now. Because people will spend all day here, right? And they'll leave without a goal. And then they'll come back again, they'll come back again. Goal setting to me and my family has been one of the most important, crucial things of us building a business. So number 1 is to have a very clearly defined goal. And not just for one area of your life, you know, but for me personally, now that I'm doing comedy, I have goals there. It's very similar to my Legal Shield business in the fact that I have to perform once a week and I try to write 5 minutes of comedy every day. Because the only thing I'd ever been successful at is this, so I sort of modeled it in the other areas. When I did my 162 tour, it was the same kind of thing. So you have all your different areas of life that you're setting goals for. But specifically today, we're going to talk about Legal Shield goals, okay? And there's 6 steps to goal setting. I'm going to go over them very briefly. And then I'm going to ask everybody to write 3 Legal Shield goals down. Okay. Number 1 is it's got to be written. Okay. Number 2, it's got to be specific. All right. As an example, you know, I want to get in shape and lose a lot of weight. Okay. Well, what's a lot of weight to you? Is it 5 pounds or is it 50 pounds? Got to be specific. Got to have a timeline or a deadline attached to it. Anybody that's ever, you know, maybe got married or ran a big party or done something, you know that 90% of most stuff gets done in the last 10% of time because there's a deadline attached to it. So it's always important to have deadlines. You know, I want to lose 50 pounds. Do you want to do it by the end of the year? Do you want to do it by the end of the decade? What's your timeline? I want to go executive director, right? When do you want to go executive director? Number 4, post it up everywhere. When you have this clearly defined goal, and I'm sure, Dave, the first time you went platinum and got the ring, I'm sure that it was up everywhere in your house and probably even drove some of the people that were in your house a little crazy sometimes, right? But you got to be fanatical. Nothing great happens, in my opinion, that doesn't have a fanatic behind it. Doesn't mean you have to be fanatical for the rest of your life, but 90 days at a time, okay? You got to plan it out. This is the least important part. And last but not least, you have to decide what you're going to give up or what things in your life you're going to change. To me, I went from probably watching 20 or 30 hours a week of television the minute I joined network marketing till I well past the time we had made our first $1 million. I never watched television ever. So what I want you to do now is I want you to write 3 goals that are clearly defined. And it could be by the end of the month or it could be by Oklahoma City, but your 3 most important legal shield goals right now, your three most important legal shield goals right now. And we're going to go right to about 2:30 today, and then we're going to break. About 12, 15 more minutes. Specific deadline. Who's got their three by show of hands? Okay, let's take three or four people, if you don't mind standing up and reading what your goals are. Who'd like to do that? It's been proven, go ahead, sir. It's been proven that if you do it, the chances of, because you're declaring it in front of a public forum, the chances go up tremendously because now you're committed to doing it. So what's your name?
Anthony.
Hey, Anthony, nice to see you. Great, what's your three goals? Okay. Okay, great. Those are awesome goals. Let's by the end of next year. So 13 months. Very good goals. What I want you to do is put a little bit of thought, and I know you were just saying them, but there's a big difference how you word it and how you sort of proclaim it. Like what I would do is say, I am an executive director on December 31st of 2012. And here's the even better thing you can end it with is no matter what. I am in the Players Club every month. I am a Players Club qualified associate. So in other words, you're speaking it into existence. You're acting like it's already happened. I'm a Players Club qualified associate for 12 months and receiving my car bonus every month. Where's your other one? Oh, I have qualified for the Maui trip, and I can't wait to get there. All right, let's hear it for Anthony. Thanks, Anthony.
Woo!
Great. Who else? Who else wants to do it? Great. Ms. Burns. Okay.
The second goal is to get another executive director leg of mine. So, get across.
Okay.
And then the third goal is to have at least 100 people that always be reviewed here.
Great. Awesome. Let's hear it for Kate. That was awesome. Thank you. And, and again, what you're going to be doing is reading these over in the morning and at night because you're going to have posted everywhere. So, again, what's so important is that you word it in a way that you do that. You know, our meeting has 100 excited people every single week. You know, we are bronze executive director. And when's your goal for bronze? Okay. It's important because, like, say your timeline's a year from now, you can do exactly what you're doing and there's no rush. That's the good news. The bad news is you probably won't get there. But if your timeline is Oklahoma City or even Dallas, you've got to really start to plan out now how you're going to do it. What most people do is they do things to relieve the tension in their life, to make them feel better, to make them feel more comfortable. That's not what I'm doing. You know, I want you to grow. And you know how you feel uncomfortable sometimes about just setting goals because you don't know if they're coming? That means you're growing. If you feel uncomfortable, it means there's a growth process. How many people realize that? There's a growth process happening in your life. So what most people do is they'll move the goal back because it'll relieve the tension. I recommend you move it forward a little bit. Right? Just as easy to go bronze by Oklahoma, quite frankly, without even looking at your organization, than it is to go bronze by Dallas. In fact, probably easier now, because now you've got to put it together. Okay? Great. Thank you. One more. Great. Sir. Wow. Have you ever been the number one recruiter here?
No.
Wow. I'm going to throw in $100 if he's the top recruiter. Is that fair? Match. All right. And if you're not, you send me $100 when I see you in Oklahoma. Is that okay? Now, you remind me a lot of when I... How old are you?
27.
Great. Awesome. That's how old I was when I got Legal Shield, so good luck with that. Awesome. Great. Anybody else want to share? We'll take one more. Great. Awesome.
But the top one is six-figure ring by December 31st, 2012.
Okay, say it like you would, like we've talked about.
Okay, I am a $100,000 ringer by December 31st, 2012.
Awesome.
I am a qualified executive director by March 30th, 2012, and make that qualification every month after that date.
Awesome.
And I am Players Club qualified by the 15th of every month with 5 points ready to roll over for the next month.
Great, let's hear it for him. That's great. Okay, and you don't have to do this if you don't want, but I'm going to raise my right hand And I'm going to get you guys to swear that before you go to bed tonight that you'll have written goals. Because I know there's people in the audience that didn't do them because, again, it makes you feel uncomfortable. Right? Because so many times we set goals, maybe, and you haven't accomplished them, and then you don't want to have that feeling. Only way to get through that pain is to do it again. So if you're interested, raise your right hand. I. Say your name. This is getting confusing. Promise. That by the time I go to bed tonight, I will have written, specific, clearly defined goals. And you're the best Super Saturday speaker we've ever had here in Utah. All right, let's go to number two. I'll just leave. Number two. You got my brother coming up soon, is that right? I don't know if that's been announced. He's excited. Oh! I'm sorry, I ruined everything. Number two. Identify. We're gonna brush through these last five and get out of here right on time. It's 2:30 on time. To identify and eliminate all distractions. Identify and eliminate all distractions. Now listen, there's distractions in your life that you can't eliminate and that you don't want to eliminate, and you might not even consider them distractions, right? But like for instance, over the last 6 months of, or last 9 months, my brother Mike was the primary caregiver for my dad. My dad passed October 22nd, not too long ago. And Mike literally spent his last, really 3 months more than anything, but last 9 months by his bedside. And it was so awesome and a beautiful experience to watch Mike, who was like the black sheep in the family, go to being like, you know, when he wasn't around, it was like, where's Michael? And my dad just absolutely loved him. And that was a distraction that he chose. Right? Some of you have children, and you know, I might call them a distraction, but you're not going to ignore them. You know, you're not going to give them any less love than you would in building a Legal Shield business. So there's some distractions that you have to decide and be consciously aware of eliminating, and some that you're just going to work around. That makes sense? Because we all have different circumstances in life. But it's important to be very clear about what's costing you money and what's making you money. We've all heard it before, but hobbies cost you money, and business is what? Make you money. Unfortunately, 90% of the people treat this business like a hobby. Treat it like a business, it'll pay you like a business. Treat it like a hobby, it'll pay you like a hobby. Number three. Okay, these are six things that you want to be doing all of the time now, right? So number one is you have a clear goal. You have something tangible that you're going for, okay? Number two, we talked about, is figuring out what your distractions are and eliminating them. Like, honestly, television, folks, like if you're watching shows like Dancing with the Stars and stuff like that, it doesn't mean you shouldn't have some balance in your life. But I'm going to tell you, you're not going to get to the top doing stuff like that. You got to make the hard decisions, if that's a hard decision. Number three is to have your list with you at all times. Because somebody that's in the game, it's like, man, there's a 5 minute break right now. Hey, Ryan, it's Steve Miller, just following up, seeing if you had time to watch the DVD. Boom. Hey, Dave, I know you haven't really done much, but I want to introduce you to my brother. Boom. And you're constantly working, right? Where if your list isn't home, I'll just do it when I get home. But you want to always have your list with you, and you always want to be adding to your list, looking at your list, just constantly going over it. I've never, ever, ever had a day timer. You know, I'm not one of these guys with a big fancy system, right? This is my system. When I fill it up, I get another one. Right? Sometimes it takes me about an hour to find a lead because, I wrote this guy, and I'm not saying that's a good system, right? But have a system where you have names and phone numbers and you constantly have it with you 24 hours a day. How many people can hold up right now and honestly can say they have a list of over, you know, 50 names and numbers right now that you can pull out and call somebody? That's great. That's great. Awesome. Number four. These are six things I want everybody to do today. It's to schedule a personal, not your team, schedule a personal private business reception and a private conference call. Now, again, successful people are willing to do what successful people aren't willing to do. I'm saying this is one of the most six important things that you can do right now. You'll get to decide today whether you're going to do that or not. And a caveat to that is show up at every meeting between now and Oklahoma City with a guest. Every meeting. Some of us did that when we first got started. And man, if your team saw you do that, no matter what, it probably means you have to have, what, 5 to 7 confirmed guests at every meeting to have one positively show up. You can't do it with zero. You can't do it by inviting one person a week. You can't do it by having 3 confirmed people. You've got to have 5 to 7 confirmed. That alone, committing to one guest a week between now and Oklahoma City, blow up your business. How many people would be willing to do that? We'll see. Number five, create and surround yourself with a positive environment conducive to growth. You know, I talked a little bit about this earlier, but everything right now, if this is really your time, and this is your 3 to 6 months where you're going to explode with Legal Shield, you have to make sure that the people in your life, the environment in your life, everything that's going on is a positive environment. Doesn't mean you're not going to have life situations. You know, the difference between really successful associates and everybody else is everybody else winds up having family situations or other things, wind up having the circumstances define them of who they are. And, you know, you look at people like Dave Savoule. I mean, you know, he doesn't tell you what his problems are. He doesn't tell you when his, you know, when his dad's in the hospital on his last leg. You don't learn these things because we don't focus on it, and we don't want to handicap everybody else because we have challenges in our life. So number five is to surround yourself with a positive environment conducive to growth. And number six, and I really have two number sixes, so I'm going to share them both. I got a 6A and a 6B. I couldn't really come up with number six. Originally, it was to have fun, because I think that most of us are too stressed out in this business, and you got to have fun, and if you're having fun, you're going to attract other people that are having fun. I love the Mary Kay saying, too blessed to be stressed, too blessed to be stressed. And sometimes we're so focused on what's not right than to feel blessed. And Paul Meyer, the late, great Paul Meyer, said that obstacles are what we see when we don't have clearly defined goals. We're so focused on our obstacles. But when you have clearly defined goals, you don't even notice it, and you jump right over them. So that's my 6A, is to have fun. My 6B, and you can choose either one you want, is to commit 100% to the Players Club and never look back. You know, my family's been in the Players Club for, Dave, how long has this been around? About 124 months we've been in the Players Club. And I can tell you, a lot of those 124 months, including the last one and the one before and the one before that, have not been easy. You know, but every single month, I know, and sometimes your mind will play tricks on you, and some of you have done the same thing. You're like, well, I've been in it long enough now where my team will understand if I move on to the next phase of the business where I'm just telling them to be in the Players Club, right? But every single month to go out there and get five new members or a couple new associates and qualify them, with everything else that we have going on in our life, is challenging and it's work. But I don't do it for the $500 a month, although it's great, and I don't do it for the free vacations, although they're fantastic. What I do it for is to create a good model for our team so they can follow what we do, not what we say. And so that's it. I mean, those are my tips. Hopefully you got some value out of today. How many people right now are committed to going to the Oklahoma City convention in April?
Yeah.
Well, every single Thursday night, what we'll do and we'll continue to do is the Amelia family has a party. It's on Thursday night. You're welcome to come. It's open to everybody. We don't charge. It's sort of a welcome reception. And it's our thank you to all the associates in Legal Shield that continue to go out there and build our dreams by helping you build yours. So just been a tremendous fun today. I was excited to be here, but I'm also excited to get back to Las Vegas. But I'll tell you guys saved me a ton of money today. If I was still in Vegas, I'd probably be down an extra $1,000 right now. So anyway, I'll turn it back over to Dave Hall. Thank you so much for everything.
All right, so it's a short, quick in-and-out trip, so we thought we would. And if you haven't had a chance to sign this book afterwards, we'll have it up here. A little coffee table book for you to see some of the places that we're going to take your brother Mike to. Because he'll spend a little bit more time with us. No, we definitely... You guys want him back? We'll have to get him back here at a time where we can spend a little bit more time. There's some beautiful places in the state of Utah that we'd love to, you know, take you around, show you, introduce you to all the wonderful things that we have here. And I don't know about you guys, man, but I've been truly inspired today. I know that just in jotting down my notes for 2012 and where my business is going to be going to is a whole new level that I almost, like, didn't want to put it down because I'm like, oh, but if I vocalize it and tell everyone and then it doesn't happen, oh, I hate that. And it's like, you know what? You said just go for it. You got to put it down there. You got to put it out there. And so, you know, I just texted my wife. I said, honey, get ready to rock and roll. In 2012, we're taking our business to a whole new level, and I'm going to be able to point back to this date. December 10th, I was at the event where I said, you know what? I'm ready to go to a whole new level. You know, this business, we're going to blow the lid off it here in the state of Utah. So the next time you come back, we'll be in the Energy Solutions Arena where the Jazz play. So anyhow, you guys, give it up again for Mr. Amelia. Thank you. All right. got the clip ready to play? I need the clip queued up.
Oh, my.
Do we have a technical version? Where's the thing?
It's on the desktop.
You guys ready to see who's coming next month? And no, next month's not his brother. We got like the next 6 months booked out of just mega superstars. Just solid, 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 awesome leaders that are going to blow your mind. We got a clip real quick that we want to show you, the ring speech of the gentleman who's going to be coming next month. And the first time I heard this guy talk, quite honestly, I was like, it was hard for me to hear and process what he was saying. I got used to it after about 5 minutes, so it might take you a little bit to adapt because he's not from America. He actually spent time in a prison camp in Taiwan, born in, I believe, Laos, and very, very, very inspirational. So when you hear his story, hey, bring some Kleenexes and stuff, it just makes you just go, hold on, if a guy can go from being a prisoner from the Vietnam War and stuff like that, and when you hear his family stories, you're just going to be like, what do you got to feel sorry for? I mean, you haven't had to watch or endure any of these things. When you see what he's going through, and then you just see what he's done here in this land of opportunity, it's just truly amazing. We got that queued up. We're ready. Let's do it.
My office, and this is the case of membership. And about
now, you got to plan twice.
Hold on. $2,000.
You got to plan twice. You got to close.
They charge me $2,000. First of all,
there we go.
The ring. I want to thank Mr. and Mrs. Stonecipher for this great opportunity. You saved my life. And I mentioned this last night too, and what ring through my head, because I came from Laos to this country.
This is not it. No. It's a 9-minute clip in OKC. This is a different one. Yeah, this is a 6-minute clip. Go to YouTube. I'll pull it up. That's a great speech. But there's a different one. Type in, search his name. Okay. There you go. And 9 minutes. All right, might take a second to...
Another great story, folks. Let me give you a little bit of this. Born in Laos.
It's going to take a little... We're good.
Escaped from there. At 9 years old, spent 2 years in a prison camp in Thailand. Settled in Portland, Oregon. Platinum 2 executive director. Just recently got his platinum jacket. And his Players Club qualified, and again, making a full-time living part-time. Help me welcome to the stage, Mr. K.O. Camp Dillavong.
All right, good afternoon. I don't have much time, so I'm going to be really brief. First of all, I want to thank Mr. Wilburn Smith, Mr. Gene Leiter, Mr. Casey Call, Mr. Mike Bishop for believing in me. And to my team, I go to the end of the earth for you. You guys, this is for you. All right, I want to talk about my story a little bit. I started business about 2 years ago, and I was running my company, my mortgage company, and was working prepaid legal services, and I saw the membership right away. And from that moment on, when I was still running my mortgage company, at my first year, we made $100,000 on my first year, and brought in about 2,000 people in our organization. And I was just like, at that time, I was like, wow, you know what? At that time, I was decided, you know what? Maybe this is the time to go full time. So I shut down my mortgage company and went on. And the second year in the business, we brought in over 6,000 people to our organization. And ladies and gentlemen, and here's what I'm trying to tell you, that you can also make full-time income working with part-time. I was running two businesses at the same time. If I can do it, you can do the same thing. Now, here's the thing. You see, this is the first time in my whole life. This is my first time in 20 years. I came to this country 20 years first time in my whole life, I'm so passionate about what I do. Yeah, I did mortgage insurance, I did mortgage, I did insurance, I did restaurant. I never get as much passion. And the reason is that, you know, I'm right here today, not because I'm not here to sell membership. I'm here to correct an injustice in the United States. I'm here to correct the injustice in the legal system. And I'm like, I'm not here to sell no membership. I'm here to build an empire. See, right before legal, I need to have an attorney write a letter for me. And they did. They wrote a letter for me. And guess what? You know how much they charged me for that letter? $2,695. $2,000 for that one letter. You know what? Here's the thing. Here's why it makes me so passionate about this. Because $2,000. Luckily, I was in position at that time to defend myself. I write a letter. I'll write a check. I took out a checkbook. I wrote down $2,600. And I'm thinking, what about the average American family out there who doesn't have $2,000 in their checking account to be able to afford the legal system? What about those people? And that's how I see it. That's what makes me passionate. I was lucky to do that. But I'm looking out there, I go, you know what? People, you know, justice in America is not black or white. And I realize it's green. If you have money, you can get justice. You know, and I go, you know what? I was fortunate enough. What about the people out there who doesn't have enough $2,600 in their bank account? And you know what? Either you pay their mortgage or keep their home or pay for their rights to be protected. You know, they're not that fortunate enough, and that's why we're going to go out there, we're going to protect. It's time for us to stand up for our rights. You know, I came from a country, there's no justice, there is no freedom. Okay? You know, in my country where I came from, if they don't like you, the government don't like you, they take you and you'll never see your family again. You're done. Because there's no justice. And you come in here, and Mr. Stone Tyler say, right, without justice, there is no freedom. I know that. I've seen that happen. People die if there's no justice. I'm not here to sell membership. I'm on a crusade. And you know what? You know what? No. I don't have much time, guys. Now, but you know what? And also my parents, I came here for the opportunity also. Not just for Jeff, but opportunity. Okay? I always dreamed, 20 years, I dreamed of becoming somebody. I want to be somebody. You know, my parents, I want to make my parents proud. I want to be somebody, I want to help my family, I want to support my family, but I know that working a job is not going to get it done. So I look, I search my whole life, I search, and I found prepaid legal services. But you know what? Even that, and when I found it, I go, you know what? I know where I want to go. So I got to have a plan. So I came up, I'm going to share with you a simple plan that can not only go there and become a crusade and become somebody and help your family at the same time, right? I looked around the company, I make pretty good money doing mortgage, but you know what? I got to have a plan. I come in here, a plan. And so I look around the company when I started, I study company, I look around, who is the top dog out there, right? You know? And I said, that's who I want to be. A very competitive person. And I go, what is it that they have? And I saw two people up on the top that I really admired. Mr. Dave Spola, Mr. Brian Crowther. I got a chance to meet Brian Crowther for the first time, and you know, and he really inspired me. So I go, you know what? I got to do what it takes. So I got to come up with a game plan. Here's my plan. How many people know that that's what it takes to be diamond? You want to free your family? You want to become financially free? You've got to have a big dream. You're going to dream anyway, why not just dream big, right? You're going to dream big. And I go, and I saw this, I go, you know what? If it takes to be a diamond, to make $1 million, that's what I'm going for. I don't care how long it takes me. And I go, almost up. But I'm very passionate about this thing. This is the first time in my life, I'm very passionate about this thing. And no, can you imagine they say no to me? My why, unbelievable, right? And I want to be somebody so bad that you cannot stop me. You cannot stop me. And let me ask you this. If you know, why can't you? I mean, people drive nice car, why can't you? People go out on vacation, take their kids to Europe and to Paris, why not you? If they can live a nice house, why not you? What makes them special than you? When is it going to be your turn? When is it going to be, ask yourself, when is it going to be your turn? And if you say, well, my turn will never come, here's what I want you to do. If you say you think you can't, here, I want you to do this. When you go home, when you go home after this convention tonight, and when you get home, you go up, and before you tuck your kid into bed, okay? Before you tuck him in, I want you to get down on your knee, and you look into your son and your daughter's eyes. And you tell them what, and you look in the eye, and you say, when you can, you say, you look in their eyes and you say, you don't deserve it. You don't deserve to go to the best college. You don't deserve to the best life out there. You look in your wife's eye and say, you know what? You don't deserve it. And look in your parents' eye, you do not deserve to retire. You deserve work. And you, I can't do that. That's why I'm here. And I know, I know you can up there on the top. I know you can do either. And I know that you can't do it either. That's why you're here. I know this. I'm here. You know what? Let me close out with this. Man, I'm excited. I can't wait. If I'm a Tumia, I go home right now. I'm going to stop building this thing. I'm really, you know, you can't stop me. Nobody can stop your dream, you guys. You know, and let me ask you, I'm going to ask Nick. Mr. Dave Smola and Mr. Brian Keller, can you please reserve me a diamond spot right there? I'm coming, and I'm going to take a lot of people with me. Thank you so much.
You don't have to pronounce his name. Kale Kumpelabong. Is going to be coming in from Portland, Oregon next month to do our Super Setter. You guys went out there and built, first year built a team of 2,000 associates. By the way, it's January 14th, if you're looking to your planners, January 14th. 2,000 people his first year. And then the second year they added 6,000 people. You guys, do you think there's probably a few things we could learn from him? You combine that with the pearls of wisdom that you got today from Mr. Melia. The goal setting. The proper framing it when you say it is to show that you believe it. With the training that we're going to get on how to build a large organization for Mr. Kumpelabong, you think what could 2012 be for your family? Keep in mind, he went from nobody on his team to 2,000 people 1 year later. Added another 6,000 the second year. 2013, what if the next 2 years of your business equaled what his was? What would life be like at the end of 2013? Would your kids, would your grandkids appreciate the fact that you said, hey, I'm going to buckle down, I'm going to do this business. I'm going to stop treating it as a hobby, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to work it. January 14th, we're going to be here. It's going to be a fabulous event. Now, you all know that, yeah, you can get a ticket today for the event. I can't imagine somebody walking out of this room saying, I'll just see if I can get one later, if I can fit it into my schedule and stuff. You heard Mr. Melia. He said, hey, look, Be at every event. But for the people that say, hey, look, I'm ready to blow my business up. I'm ready to take it to the next level. We have a promotion for you where you can get 5 tickets for the price of 4. Now, if you put down goals that have to do anything with production or recruiting or a larger team or going executive director or being in players club, think about that. Do you really believe that you're going to do it? Do you really believe that you're going to recruit, you know, 5 new associates? Do you really believe that you're going to build your team? If your actions show that you don't, it'll manifest it in what you do on a daily basis. Oh, I believe I'm going to have 5 guests here. I have 5 people next month, but I'm going to plan for 1. They're not in alignment there, and so all of a sudden you go out there and you do exactly what you said when he asked Kate to stand up and give her goals, and he said, "On what time?" Well, by Dallas.
Okay, but what do you say? He goes, I encourage you to dramatically move that up. It's easier to do it in a shorter and a quicker period of time because it's going to make you get out there and do it. You put a timeline, but do you want five people next year or five people this month so they can be in front of KO? How much more will happen in 2012 if you get your five people in front of KO versus sign them up the month after KO's here? Wouldn't you want those five people trained by Mr. Kumpfillavong on how to build a large organization? I walked into this room thinking I know quite a bit about this business and how to get people started right and how to build a decent team. I was blown away about what I didn't know today. And I took notes. I need to change a lot of things in my business. But another thing I took notes is I noted down a few people that I'd put a lot of time in over the last 30, 60, 90 days into their business that weren't here today. And I said, not the person I need to run with in 2012. I need to change my list of people I'm running with. Because people that promised me that they would never miss an event aren't here. Now, I'm going to follow up later on today and find out, you know, barring a death in the family, there is no excuse why they didn't keep their word with me. And so I just go, you know what, good, there's a few new spots opened up for new people that I'm going to be running with in 2012. But I'd strongly encourage you to look at your... Camp Philibunk and have them learn how to build five large organizations. If you want five people to learn how to build five large organizations, then put it out there. I don't want to do it. I'm not going to try to do it. I am going to do it. And if I am going to do it, then manifest it in your belief with your actions. And that's just an encouragement to you because I know early on in the business, a coach, a mentor of mine, sat down with me and said, Dave, never come back to the next event with a ticket. Always leave this event with five tickets and your team will grow dramatically. Now, that's back when they were $60 a ticket. Right, Mom? And Mom went with me to a lot of those events and I always came back with five tickets. Left that event with five tickets and I was one of the top recruiters every single month at those events. And then in 2003, I was the top recruiter in the entire company. People say, Dave, how are you doing? I never minimize my goals. When I put it out to the universe that, hey, look, I want to build my team. I'm tired of, you know, being middle class. I said, I'm going to put it out there. I'm getting five. And when I had five tickets with me, when I walked around, there were five tickets in my wallet. I didn't casually think about it. I was like, I've got to get five new recruits this month. Every day it manifests to me. When he says, put your goals up, put them all around your house. Why does he say put them all around your house? It gets annoying to everybody when they see them in your car and on your fridge and in your mirrors and in your house and everywhere else like that. Why? So that you're looking at it every single day. You're saying, that's me. I am an executive director. I am a players club. I am a ring earner. I am doing these things. Versus saying, I am coming back next month. Too many of you have been saying this for way too long. Look forward to seeing you January 14th with your five people. Everybody have a great month!